All right, everybody, here we are in the studio. You're listening to your favorite friend, JoJo, and
Stella.
Stella is here. That's right. This is Neon Shrines, a show of pilgrimage and power spots in the ramshackle, sadly not functioning Radio Valencia studios. But we're in the studio recording on our phone. And that jingling you hear in the background, that's Stella making two cocktails for us. One is a... Well, if you walked by and you looked in the window, you'd see us drinking out of red Solo cups.
And that's the universal sign of alcohol.
That's a universal sign of having a good time.
In
popularized
America.
By young people.
It's true.
In the early 2000s. And I have to say, as a young person in the early 2000s drinking out of a red Solo cup, I have an affinity for it.
It's also just, as a feat of engineering, it is pretty great.
Yeah.
Like, it's sturdy, but it's light. You can do flip cup with it. You can. It really has, necessity is the mother of all invention. Maybe the Solo cup has invented drinking culture as we know it because of its flexibility and its flipping.
That.
I do too. I'm just off the cuff here. I'm ready to be back. I'm back. I got my
Stellaria,
wisdom.
Welcome back. We missed you, and having you back in the studio with your wisdom is, I can just feel the energy. It's palpable. And I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. I think the cup itself form has dictated
an entertainment culture
function.
And that's one of the things that I think we've even mentioned this on the show before, that Europeans see in media from the U.S. Europeans, Asians, Africans, everybody sees it. And they're like, that's what culture is like in the United States. There are a lot of things in teen movies that are fake. Red Solo cups are not fake. That's true. That's real.
That's real.
That is what you drink out of.
And I remember we were living in Holland at the time, and Red Solo cups were introduced into the drinking culture.
Oh, yeah.
And the shape was wrong. They were like slimy.
Yeah, they had like a grease layer.
Yeah, the whole thing was strange.
They don't have as advanced microplastics as we do here.
Yes. We have illegal microplastics. So, who knows what invention proceeded after those forged or counterfeit Solo. They weren't Solo cups to start. Solo had not made them.
Right.
And so.
Well, and okay.
No, you have lightning bolts shooting out of your eyes. What is it?
Just thinking more and more. Like, this is a whole project, We've spoken about our love of strange drinking vessels before, and those again dictate what kind of time you're going to have. If you have the drinking horn, you can't set it down. If you have the what's that called? The porron, that glass thing they use in Spain.
Yeah.
Like, the whole night is going to be people making a mess, trying to get the longest stream. Like, that, it determines the social form.
The Grollo. Which we've spoken about
probably
before.
Brings about kissing.
I have to, cheek to cheek, I have to say, I would like to give a very special shout out to one of the Grand Masters of the Order, Jeb Innerlandi, for gifting me a drinking horn.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
And I still have it. And I occasionally use it. I tend to bring it out on my birthday.
Yeah.
For better or worse. Though, one custom that I don't think I've ever participated in, which looks kind of fun, is when at a Greek restaurant they start breaking plates.
Yeah. That's they do that. British tourists on Instagram love to do that at like one particular Greek island. It's like a British restaurant in Greece.
Uh-huh.
And the whole point is that you end the night by like smashing plates.
And I wonder if, I hope they sweep those plates into a common sack and then
reforge.
Yeah, reforge them. And I hope it's the same plates being used. Because I'm thinking here of drinking chai in India, where you have these earthenware vessels. I mean, they're cups, I guess you'd just describe them as sort of earthenware.
Yeah, they're terracotta.
Terracotta cups.
Yeah, it's just clay. And
which they fire quickly, right next door. And then you drink them and you smash them right back in the kiln.
Yeah.
And they're refired.
And you just melt it down again.
And then they reform. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool. And I think, too, the for the chai thing, it does add a special flavor. Drinking it out of a terracotta cup, I would say, adds a kind of like earthiness to it that, if you just put it in a regular old porcelain mug, it's not going to be the same.
So what's it say that now we're drinking out of Solo cups, but we're mixing drinks from unmarked mason jugs? We have two unmarked mason jars that are right here. And I was just thinking I could turn on the mics. And now we're broadcasting live over the airwaves.
If there are airways.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, good.
So, I mean, just to let the listeners in on the setup, we're in the studio, but the studio is not functioning. So we brought in our own tiny mics and recording onto my phone, but we've hooked our tiny mics onto the studio mics.
Yeah.
And so I just turned on the studio mic. So who knows? Maybe people are hearing this.
Maybe every little once in a while they catch a glimmer of a word or something.
Yeah. But here we are drinking homemade cocktails out of mason jars. And I should say happy Friday to everyone out there. Boy, this was a long week for everybody. And I'm glad we made it to Friday. I'm glad we made it to show.
Yeah.
Oof. We can start smashing our own plates here in the studio.
Well, that's something that I did very memorably at the end of my college career. With two friends.
Started smashing plates.
Just bottles, just like screaming. It was such a beautiful.
Sounds it.
Beautiful experience.
Please tell me you're in a frat basement or something.
No, we were probably very unsafe. We were at our dorms, but there was like, the dorms were built in the, they were anti-riot dorms. They were built in the early 70s. So there's no common spaces.
Oh yeah.
So we went outside and there was a kind of bridge between two buildings and we
were
just hurling them into the abyss. Boy, was that fun. I'll always remember. There's also, it was like at the end of the year. So someone had like, you know, dragged a couch out of their dorm and like left it out there. So you're just like sitting on this old couch, like throwing bottles and smoking cigarettes. Everything that your parents hope you don't do in college.
Sounds about right. I mean, sounds about right. You know, I'm thinking that I think the American custom is to drink Monster energy drinks and punch holes in the wall. I think that's also a custom.
A form of breaking plates.
Yeah.
I've never punched a wall. I'll say that. Just
no, me neither. I mean, I've never felt the urge.
No.
It's never inspired. Can I have a sip of that drink you have?
The bubble tea from our friends at House of Dim Sum? Yes, of course.
Yes, friends at House of Dim Sum.
She made it sweeter than normal. I always ask for half sweet, but this is a bit too sweet for me, but still good.
Now, I'm enjoying this beverage. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to drink more of the tea and leave the boba for you? Or should I enjoy the boba and leave more of the tea for you?
Leave more of the boba. But, you know, have a little boba here and there. It's hard not to.
Thank you, Stella.
You're welcome.
Well, we broadcast a show 2 weeks ago that was not recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It went out on the airwaves.
We just love broadcasting. Yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of fun for us. So we thought, what the hell?
I think there are some people on Radio Valencia who, you know, have been doing this for so long and doing so much work for it. And it's a real blow for it not to be going out live on the air. And I get that. But I am very much a... It's the ritual of it for me. It's what do I do on Friday? I go and I make show.
Yeah.
Does anyone hear show? Would you hear show if it fell down in the forest and you weren't there to hear it? No. And that's fine.
I'm still show. We make it for these four walls. We make the show for the guardian angels.
Well, we feed the angels. Yeah, we feed the angels who honk.
And I've realized that last week's show, episode 41.
The super long one that you did.
The 6-hour show. You're not going to find that in... You're not going to find that on the Neon Shrines podcast page, rebroadcast page.
Put it on there.
In order.
Oh, right, right.
That's right. We had to sneak it in somewhere. But just look for the 6-hour show and you'll find it. But anyways, that was all about Guardian Angels.
Ooh.
And I realized that was not a one-shot for me. That I think it's going to be this whole year. I think all of my, I'm turning 40 in a week, all of the age of 40 is going to be gratitude to Guardian Angels.
Nice. That's a great decade.
And it's going to have to be... And it's wild that a friend of the show, Azamel, mailed me on a lark a new icon of St. George.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful icon, and I really don't know how I'm going to repay.
It's like beaten metal. It's really beautiful.
I don't know how I'm going to repay that
particular
gift. And I don't even think Azamel knows I'm turning 40. Like, it's happening.
Yeah, angel waves.
Angel waves. And I have to say, Azamel make some of the most stunning jewelry.
Yeah, I'm wearing actually it right now. Yeah. This beautiful amulet of a chalice.
The chalice.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you know, shout out to Azamel for being so in touch with the inner planes. But his icon is going to be a centerpiece in my veneratory practices for the next year. And I think it's going to have to mean building a better shrine or rebuilding a better shrine. Yeah. Waking up all of our objects that have been slumbering peacefully in our shrine cabinets, but you know, getting some energy in there.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
You know, shrines, the gods need constant care and tending because we need constant care and tending. You know, it's not a one-way street.
Yeah.
And so 40 is going to be the year that I venerate, and I'm going to try to do morning practices, try to do evening practices, and just kind of shape my life up a little bit better when it comes to my relationship with my guardian angels and St. James and St. George's horse and St. George and the gang.
The gang.
The celestial knights, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense too. You know, I've been thinking a lot about play. We've talked about it on the show before. And I, you know, on a very kind of basic level, part of the reason that I, at least, have things in the shrine is I like to hold and touch and play with them. I like to move them around, and that's just play. And I remember things, and I tell little stories about them. For example, we have this this little shrine that our dear friend, well, her art name is Manu, made out of, she's a potter or a ceramicist. And it's this tiny little shrine, and like, I haven't quite figured out what to use it for, but like, every time I look at it, my mind is full of ideas. None of them are very concrete, but like, that's an object that's asking me to play with it and like, see what it wants and see what kind of universe it has inside of it. So
oh,
I think that's a great...
I know that object.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's got a purpose, and I haven't quite pinned it down yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. So
also, I get to put little characters next to each other, like the little Gundam robot has been in a little case with another Gundam robot for a while. Maybe he needs to go talk to the Mary figurine, you know.
It's just getting a little bit... detaching myself from the behavioral patterns that have structured my life for the last year, which I will admit I've been overworking, been checking the email too much, been on the net, chasing that cheap dopamine.
Yep.
Chasing that cheap dopamine thrill, and I'm going to try to extricate myself from the doom-scrolling dopamine depletion loops and get into the real.
Dopamine, you know?
Yeah. Get into the real joy, the joy-seeking. The joy-seeking loop of veneration and prayer and all that stuff. So wish me luck, everybody. I'm going to need it.
We'll have periodic updates, no doubt.
Yeah, but I have to say, we're off to a great start thanks to our friend Azamel. So check him out.
And even before then, I'm sure you talked about this last time, but the guardian angel ritual, I think, was really the kickoff for that. You know.
Well, thankfully, time moves backwards. So we know we knew what to do when it came time to do it.
Yeah.
And it became the only thing we wanted to do. And then we had a really great showing of people in the park,
I have to say. You know, I love it because it's – yeah, everybody had a little guardian angel story, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, I think guardian angels, especially within like a U.S. Euro context, can often, because of kind of like an 80s, 90s boom, like there were like books that were like, my angel, you
angel
know,
in the
touched
outfield.
By an angel, angel, you know, it had this kind of cornifying moment or like a mainstreaming that I think spoke to people, and that's why it became popular, but then people sort of became tired of it. But it's still there. It's still like a common practice. I think it might be the closest that like a kind of secular Judeo-Christian base, but somewhat atheist or agnostic, everybody can still kind of talk about guardian angels.
Oh, yeah. And you find it across American vernacular religions or folk religions. And so the iconography is pretty common.
Yeah.
In dollar stores, you can go and find the candles.
Yeah. And the little Precious Moments figurines.
Precious Moments or on Hallmark cards or whatever.
Yeah,
angels
holiday
everywhere.
Cards.
So know, now I'm thinking today. About it. A good way to do this would just be to beef up our festival celebrations.
Yeah.
So it's like hitting that Day of the Dead.
Yeah. Well,
hitting All Hallows Eve, hitting Halloween, All Saints Day, really leaning heavy into Christmas this year. Really. And I have to say, listeners, my favorite show. I listen to Neon Shrines all the time. I love it. Neon Shrines. And it is all of my favorite music ever.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to music since I've been a young person. Listen, I lived through the golden age of Napster. So music has been at my fingertips for a very, very long time. Going through the playlists of Neon Shrines, it's all there. And it's all over the map, from good reggae to city pop to classical music, rock and roll.
Yeah.
Blues. So anyways, I go through and the show, I listen to the shows and I get to hear my favorite music and I get to hear my favorite person's Stellaria talk and I get to hear great guests. And anyways, my favorite show that I play over and over, more than any of the other shows, is the Christmas special, which was just, I think, our first big blowout. More people in the studio.
Yeah, we've only been doing this show for a few months. So,
more people in the studio than we had seats for, and it was just... I don't plan on doing that again.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we should do it the whole month, though. Maybe we should try to get the Jamboree
model. We should
start
as soon as Thanksgiving is over. You know?
Is that the official kickoff?
I mean, some people say November 1st, like as soon as Halloween is over,
I
people
like
would
that.
Say.
How do we get that going? How do we skip Thanksgiving?
I know. Ugh. Thanksgiving is so boring.
Ugh.
And just a dumb holiday.
I'm not into Thanksgiving. The food sucks.
Yeah. We should instead use a kind of cross calendar of the Catholic saints and see who jumps out to us there. And then also the that great calendar you have in your office.
Oh, the Jubilee Saints calendar?
The Jubilee Saints calendar, which is...
Yeah.
Who publishes that?
Atana Media.
Atana Media. So it's this kind of like anarcho, weirdo calendar of saints, quote unquote, but it's just really cool. Like Ursula Le Guin, or it recently like Robert Anton Wilson, you know, just weirdo, awesome.
Every
people.
Single day is devoted to what they call one of the Jubilee Saints.
Yeah.
These are the saints that have more or less pushed us into Jubilee time, thanks to their writing or activism or poetry or what have you. So every day is dedicated to one of them. And in fact, today is the feast day of Peter Lamborn Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Of Hakim Bey.
Yeah.
And so I actually have some audio recordings of his that I'd like to play a little bit later in honor of Bey. And I should say that it was really by virtue of Peter Lamborn Wilson that the Order of St. George's Horse absorbed the Jubilee Saints calendar.
Yeah, yeah.
So our sister organization, the Moorish Orthodox Church of America, uses it. And because we have exchanged rights and honorifics, I feel as though this is a shared practice that we have with them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we should do that instead of like worrying about Thanksgiving or redefining Thanksgiving. I mean, I like that Thanksgiving is on the books as a time that you make a big feast and have your friends around.
I can't think of another feast in the American calendar system. Can you?
I mean, Christmas kind of. You know, people have like a Christmas ham or whatever, but... It's mostly about the gifts.
We used to do a lot more feasted.
Yeah.
Like, I always love it when you read stories from, like, the 19th century where, like, the for example, the street urchin dreams of, like, a buttered roll.
Yeah.
Or you know, a time when food was fetishized. Like a food object, like a duck.
Yeah, the thought bubble with the, like, roast chicken in it. That's the one. That's the one I... set down in stone through cartoons.
The old pie cooling on a windowsill trope.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't tell you the number of, like, as a child, the books that I read that would just, I still in my mind, I can see the little, they weren't grand feasts, but they were little feasts that these characters would have. And inevitably it was like, you know, a hunk of bread and a corner of good cheese and a fresh apple, you know, and it was just like, my mouth was like watering. And there was even a joke in my family that like I would have been I would have been fine as like a noble who was imprisoned during the French Revolution, because I think there's some evidence that what they were fed in the Bastille was just like baguette and cheese and wine. And I was like, yeah, that's about the long and short of my desires.
Good for you, huh? Yeah, I think, and part of feasting is giving thanks. And of course, Thanksgiving is, I guess, somehow modeled on prayer.
Yeah, but okay, well, obviously it's the Puritan goofball terrible version of a really good thing, which is having a feast with
Imagine
all your
feasting
friends.
With the Puritans, what, tap water, a yam, and then you have to sit quietly
and
with no
pray.
Music
and not even pray in like the fun way.
Puritans, no thanks. No thanks. But you know, I would like to get some type of prayer before the meal thing going to give thanks. But again, like, God doesn't feature in my cosmology really. I mean, I remember the realization that how pompous of me not to think God exists.
Yeah.
But I also don't think God doesn't exist, and he doesn't not exist
right
for me.
Right.
Everything is God. So, yeah. So I guess I'd have to get in touch. I'd have to go a little bit deeper to find a means of thanking and gratitude that isn't, more or less appropriated from the Judeo-Christian slash Islamic system or the Buddhist system, or, you know, I'm not just going to pick it up from somewhere. I think I'm going to have to.
Yeah. I think poetry might be a good source though.
Poetry might be
poetry
good.
Poetry often has like a transcendence to it.
Mm-hmm. Also chanting does.
Yeah.
So any noises you and I could make that would, hoo, ha, hee, hee, ha, hoo, ha, hee, hee, ha, like clapping.
Well, you know, I do have friends who invented a new birthday song, which they sing every year.
Okay.
Which is, it's going to take me a minute to remember it, but I'm remembering now this Quebecois birthday song, which I've always wanted to sing. Maybe I'll sing it for you on your birthday. And it's in French, but it's, I'll just use Mathieu as the name. Mon cher Mathieu, c'est à ton tour de nous laisser parler d'amour. And it's, my dear Matthew, now it's our turn to talk about love of you.
Oh, wait a minute.
Right? Okay. Isn't that a great song?
We could
Yeah, we can adapt that.
We can adapt that.
Yeah, and then my friends made another one that I'll have to dredge through my memories to remember that one. It's a great one though, and I think, you know, making up little songs or chants. Another thing is what's that like Christian prayer that's like the funny one that like kids do when they're forced to say the prayer before they eat a meal.
Something, something, sticky feet. Let me give you something good to eat.
No, that's trick or treat. But there's one that's like something, something. It's like God, God, dot, dot, dot. Let's eat. But I remember that being a funny thing in my household. My dad, raised Catholic, would always do these really short prayers.
Bread,
and my mom,
meat, let's eat. Bread, meat, let's eat.
God
bread, meat,
is fine,
let's
I guess.
Eat. Bread, meat, let's eat.
And then my mom, being like a Southern Protestant, always had the, you know, had to like, you had to like put in all everything you're thankful for. They were like 2 minutes long. But my dad's was always, God is good, God is great, let us thank him for this food, amen. Like in that.
In that monotone, yeah. Get it out. So yeah. There's also an appeal to that.
Yeah.
Too. I have to say, I was so, what's the word where someone says something to you and you feel good that they flattered?
Compliment? Oh.
Yeah. Eric Davis, my friend, and I should say last Monday,
well, yeah, we
did a circumambulation of
too.
Mount
Ooh.
Tam. And
or we should have them on.
It was like, yeah, it was like a 9.5 hour trek that we did, retracing the steps of Gary Snyder and Philip Whalen and reading their poetry. They created a map of Mount Tam with 9 shrines.
Ooh.
And they discovered these shrines and you stop at each one and recite sutras,
yeah.
Which we did
uh-huh.
and got into it. And
cool.
We had lunch where they had lunch and we just had a great time together. And I got... Eric said something that I considered so flattering, which he was like, oh, well, Jojo, you grew up Catholic. And I've known Eric for like a decade. And I was like, no, I didn't. Like, my parents are kind of like agnostic. And he was like, what? He's like, what?
What's all this stuff then?
Yeah, what's with all this saint stuff and like your kind of strange relationship with discipline? I was like, oh, no, that's homebrewed. You know, that's all.
That's something I picked up on in my travels.
Yeah, that's all homebrewed, buddy. Like, nah.
Like a good D&D cleric. You were born into a system, and then you became like a wandering preacher.
Wow! Whoa! I've never played a cleric in D&D, though.
To me, you always have. In a
sense. Oh, really? Thank you.
Like Fard always. Fard was a dwarven warrior, but he always seemed like a cleric to me because he was not so much because he healed people with his spells.
If anything, he hurt people a lot of them.
But he had that kind of like John the Baptist energy, I would say.
Oh, okay.
He had John the Baptist.
Anyway. Wild man.
Yeah. So not priest in the sense of like,
yeah.
Everybody kneel here, but yeah. Priest in the sense of like, there are answers out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Prophet in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a really convoluted, complicated theology for John the Baptist. Like in my own vision of Christianity, John the Baptizer was just as integral as the Christ figure.
Oh yeah.
When I was in divinity school, this is where my mind was, mm-hmm. and it was that. Let me think if I can recall it. It's John the Baptizer initiated a program of human instrumentality, and it was what John the Baptizer is not recognized as important in most Christian theological systems, but in mine. John represented the major leap from 0 to 1. So history was unfolding as it would have unfolded otherwise.
Yeah.
And it was not until John escaped civilization and spent time in the wilderness, entered into some type of relationship with divine forces, was transformed into a celestial being of some sort that was able to initiate larger machinations. And so it was John and that really started this whole Christian revelation thing. And the only reason we call it the Christian revelation is a misreading of what happened. And so what we need now are more John the Baptizers. So an army of John the Baptizers of people who can initiate these really ahistorical, transhistorical, cosmic processes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, John got the machine going and then we had Mr. Jesus and the whole gang, but it's really, we're focusing on the wrong person. You know, that in a nutshell is mine.
Well, I mean, I have to say, you know, John has to me the most, just on a very basic level, the most interesting storyline possible, which is, you know, cousin of Jesus into the wilderness, suddenly eating locusts and honey and eating a hair shirt. We don't really get the story behind that.
So it's who is his mother? Mary Magdalene?
Elizabeth.
Oh, Elizabeth. That's right.
Yeah. Of Joachim and Elizabeth. And he was a miraculous, like she was way too old to have kids.
Uh-huh.
So you have this great medieval art of Mary and Elizabeth meeting and touching each other's stomach. There's a really beautiful sculpture in Germany of them where their bellies, their pregnant bellies are rock crystal. And you can like see a little incised fetus inside. And they're like touching each other's bellies.
Do you know the name
of the piece? Produced in the Katharinenthal convent. And it's just, it's a really incredible piece.
Wow.
It's like mystical power babies, you know?
And for all you crystallologists out there.
Oh, yeah. So there's been a lot of great work on that. You know, what rock crystal signifies. And because it was such a, it was like only from like one part of the Middle East. So for it to make it all the way to like weird bumfuck Germany, something had to happen.
Yeah.
But so he's in the desert eating locusts and honey, does the baptism thing.
Like an anchorite.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah. Does the baptism thing, kind of disappears from the narrative, and then shows up in King Herod's court and is at the center of this like weird psychosexual drama.
That's right. I forgot.
Right?
The latter days of, because
yeah,
I just know him
Salome,
as,
you know?
Mr. Jesus is great that he got baptized.
Yeah.
He was one of thousands. So the baptizer function to me represents a much more impressive position in the cosmic drama.
Yeah.
Someone on the front lines who is ushering people into the kingdom of heaven, if we can use Christian terminology, the kingdom of heaven here on earth.
Yeah.
Oh, give me that every day. You know, I don't know. I always found it to be really impressive.
Then,
walk me through what happens. I remember the King Herod bring me the
head. And Herod's wife.
New wife, right? Young wife?
Yeah, the issue is that I don't know where she falls in the story of his wives, but she has a stepdaughter. They have a stepdaughter. So I guess it's Herod's wife's daughter, Salome.
Mm-hmm.
And Salome, at this big feast they're having, and he has John the Baptist prisoner, and I forget why.
John, in and out of the cling.
But they have this big feast, and at some point Salome comes and performs the Dance of Seven Veils, which has been...
That's canon?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's in the Bible.
All right, and that's a
but
belly
she performs
dance?
A dance.
That's a sexy dance.
That's apparently. Like because Herod is like, wow, wow, wee, wow.
Boner time.
And he's like, I'll do anything you want, Salome. Mm-hmm. And Salome, in consultation with her mom, has already decided that she wants to ask for the head of John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Because for some reason Herod doesn't want to kill him, and I forget why.
Well, why would you? He's a popular
figure.
Yeah,
he's like a prophet. He probably like interprets dreams much, you know, like David did in the earlier days. So, yeah. But so basically Herod is like, I really don't want to, but I did promise you anything. And then they behead John the Baptist, which, as we all know, is the only way to kill a saint. You have to decapitate
them.
You can torture them. You can crucify them. You can do everything. But in the end, it's going to be a decapitation. But then, as we know, now there are two competing churches that claim to have the head of John the Baptist.
We visited
the one in Amiens in France, and we saw it, and it's an incredible piece of art with this and it's quite out of the ordinary for that period of reliquaries because it's the skull. You see the skull. Normally they would sort of church that skull up.
Yeah.
And then the other one is in Damascus. They say they actually have the head of John the Baptist. Yeah. Now, if I were like really invested, I would say Damascus probably has a more legitimate claim on it. But as a heretical Catholic, let a thousand heads bloom.
Well, Stella, I mean, I have to say, for me, the reading of that is there's more than one skull.
Yeah.
There are
many headed hydra.
There's infinite number of skulls by virtue of the fact that John was an avatar, and there's going to be a lot of John avatars. Mm-hmm. And hey, a few of them might got beheaded. I mean,
that's the only way to get kill one. So,
so the spirit of John might have migrated to another figure, who then became John, like the conversion. Saul becomes Paul.
Yeah.
You can become John the Baptist. And I still think that people can embody the spirit. So John the Baptist might be a convenient way of naming this spirit that moves through people. What we need is a forking of that. Many, many, many John the Baptizers.
So there is also a really great silent film version that I saw a number of years ago of Salome. It's like a dance. It's really amazing. And then Oscar Wilde, of course. I think it might have been based on that Oscar Wilde play. But I'd like to read that. Oscar Wilde's such a kook.
Oh,
I'd love to read that.
And let me tell you, it's just, you know, the arch.
Yeah, the arch humor.
Yeah, the he's arch, I guess you could say.
That would be the, if someone was like, what does arch mean? I'd be like, Oscar Wilde.
Read Oscar Wilde, you know, the fastest pun in the West, you know, the guy was just so sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the court transcripts of Oscar Wilde's.
His sodomy charge? Was that his charge? Or
corrupting the youth, I think. Sodomy corrupting the youth, the whole thing. Because it's interspliced in some of the later books of Cerebus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Dave Sim's, you know, the longest running independent comic ever published. Dave Sim himself, a controversial figure for a number of reasons. Though, to his credit, claimed the inspiration for writing the longest comic ever created was a major LSD trip. and he saw the history of Cerebus unfolding.
Uh-huh.
Cerebus being the barbarian aardvark. I don't know if you know that. Yeah, so
the dog-headed guardian of him.
Sorry, I should have.
This whole time,
clear.
I thought it was just a kind of. Yeah.
No, I should have been more clear. So Dave Sim, independent, disgruntled cartoonist, Canadian, sets off to create the longest running independent comic ever in the early '80s, and the early stories are sword and sorcery, D&D world. The protagonist being a barbarian who's an aardvark in a world of humans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all humans other than this aardvark.
Does he eat ants?
No, he's a beer guzzling, meat eating. He's a barbarian.
So that's interesting. So it's more, I could see maybe something like Pun Pun being inspired by that, where Pun Pun is this sort of nebulous animal,
kind of
bird,
chicken,
avian
yeah.
character, but like in a world of humans.
Yeah. And so he, you know, the early issues are basically him just kind of tearing ass through. Yeah, basically the D&D game that I want to host.
Yes.
And I can't find people to do it. And I want it to be a one-shot. And I want it to be a 3.5-hour campaign of barbarians from different classes.
Oops, barbarians only.
Yeah, barbarians only. So it's like, and like I'm going to keep throwing you very delicate missions and asking for your dexterity. And you, like... You crush the Fabergé egg. You accidentally sit on this very valuable artwork. Like it's, yeah, you get the
yeah.
Anyways, later on, it becomes sophisticated to the point of being a little pretentious, even.
Mm.
And I like that. I like the pretension.
Yeah.
And there's a whole volume dedicated to Oscar Wilde.
Oh, wow.
And the author intercuts a lot of the
transcript
from the
wow.
because it's just so good.
Yeah.
I guess Oscar Wilde was just so canny when it came to pointing out hypocrisies in Victorian sexual morality.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, and it's great how many American young people are obliged to read The Picture of Dorian Gray in high school or college. I wonder what the logic is behind that.
Yeah, it's been ages since I've read it.
Yeah,
my favorite Oscar Wilde piece that I have read is The Importance of Being Earnest, which is a play. It just has a hilarious premise, which is that these two friends invent an excuse, essentially, to get out of various social
situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, hilarity ensues. Social satire ensues because there's also love. You know, it's just
is there an earnest, or don't they pretend to be earnest at
yeah
some
each
point?
Of them tries to be in earnest, and then they have to, like, Ernest gets sick and they have to, you know, it's
but
just,
it's also being earnest,
right? Like, yeah, the pun is there because it's spelled E-R
like a
E-S-T,
name,
but it's E-A-R-N is implied.
You know,
well,
I wish people didn't hate theater so much, and I wish the people who like theater
were less annoying
who they are. yeah it's a plague on both their houses, those who don't like theater and those who love it. I want the secret third option of viewing it as entertainment, just as I would a film or going to a concert.
Which we've done. You know, I think our Shakespeare foray is going to, like, the Globe or something. Like, because we don't have to talk to
the
actors and the producers
later and
hear about their thoughts.
Shakespeare does a great job of being normal, everyday, boring tourist fare, which is what it should be. You know, how do you entertain the slack-jawed tourist? You know, how do you entertain tourists like us?
Yeah,
you know,
come on.
People who are here for a thrill. You know, we're not invested in the profundities of the craft.
No,
it's like, you know, give them a laugh.
Yeah, or a shock or a tear. You know, it's just all the things.
So that's what we like. And Shakespeare is really the only reliable source for that when it comes to theater that I've experienced. Every time I go see amateur theater, or what would you call some of our friends that do theater? It's not amateur because they're very good at it, but it's like low scale.
Well, it's just, you know, I think a lot of it is not even about the actors. I think it's just like the current moment that we're in when it comes to like what kinds of plays are produced. It's like very conservative in a lot of ways because it has to, like, it's falsely intellectual. Like, it claims a kind of intellectuality or like a morality.
But never takes risks, ever.
No, or is funny. Like, it's, yeah. And if it is funny, then it goes to the side of like, okay, well, I don't need to like a fart joke. I mean, I love fart jokes, yeah. But, you know, it's musical theater jokes are not very interesting to me because they're formulaic. And
also, a lot of it's like culture war shit. So it's like, I'm uninterested in either side of the culture war and all sides of the culture war. And it just, I guess this is why I'm like so invested. Like, for me, theater ended with the Living Theater, the Yippies, and Bread and Puppets. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where it ended. Mm-hmm. And like, we've yet to restart.
Well, then notice there that a lot of those people was not, you know, that would be considered miming or
right,
puppetry or, you know, and those are not, you know, that's not theater. That's something else.
And it's like, you know, I've seen vestiges of that in Amsterdam in the squat scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we would go to watch
the cabaret. What did they call that? The offbeat or the illegal cabaret or something like that.
Illegal. Yeah. At the Frankreich.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of my friend Clara.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who hosted some of the most, I mean, I don't know if you remember. The thing is, it was intermixed with hardcore band.
Yeah.
And sex films.
Yes.
So it would be like, you'd go there and it'd just be like a part of, this is what I'm saying, a part of the entertainment. It wouldn't be a hallowed, pretentious thing. It would just be more entertainment for you because you're going to enjoy it because it's humans acting.
And you're getting drunk.
Yeah. And I remember the big thing, it was burlesque. And striptease. And I remember my friend Clara would, under the name, I think, like Dick Righteous or something. I forget Dick something. I forget her drag name. But anyways, she would, I remember, maybe you even know the time I'm going to mention. You know, we went to every single one of these.
Yeah.
And they were always wild. Mm-hmm. Like, they had so many different things. Like, I remember I published a fairy tale.
One
of the performers would read as a part of this. And the fairy tale was like call and response. And it had a sort of following of people who would go.
And how do they say it. In the worst of taste?
Yeah, it's in the worst of taste. And it had a following because people would come to see it to see how the fairy tale had changed.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, he would change it according to what the crowd wanted. Mm-hmm. And it was always really interactive and absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I probably have copies of it somewhere. But it would involve someone coming in from the audience and then given the option to do three things that would change the plot of the story. And I always remember this, though. That one of them is he gave them the option to smoke DMT.
And I don't so, think I, was
yeah,
there for
I, yeah,
that
I remember
one.
The time that someone freebased DMT in the middle of this performance. I mean, but that just goes to show how this was like an evolving collective project that wasn't like, you're the audience, we're the performers, sit down, shut the fuck up, and watch how brilliant you are. It was like interactive, and I remember like, another thing that a later performer would do would ask for someone from the audience that's comfortable with eroticism, and they would do striptease for each other.
Yeah.
Another one was a full-on wrestling match that was like pretty aggressive.
Brutal.
Yeah. But I remember, if you remember this one, I remember I was sitting front row with you and our friend CC and Jeffrey, and my friend Clara did a striptease and then took out her moon cup and emptied it into a squirt gun and sprayed the audience with it. And I remember I got it in my mouth.
Oh, my God.
Because I was going, oh, no. Ah! You know? And it was
essentially illegal shit.
Oh,
like,
no,
fully illegal.
No. And, you know, and then that would the performance be. And then there would be some. And then it was just more integrated in a community.
Yeah.
So I think there was so much more excitement about it because you felt – it was a little dangerous. And this is coming from someone who hates being called on.
Well, I was going to say, too, you said, oh, it wasn't just passive, it was interactive. But, like, there's so much theater now that's trying to, like, do audience.
I hate that.
Yeah, exactly.
That. Please because don't it's call not on me. Because it's one
organic,
person.
And it's not the community. It's still and it's still about person. The performer having the upper hand. It's not, like, an open. Like, it's one thing for, like, you as the performer to invite someone up and, like, do a striptease for each other. Because now you're both involved. And it's in a small community of people who understand what's going on. But to be, like, you know, at a stage play and suddenly you're out of the audience and you have to be like the baker or whatever. It's like, ugh, come on. Let me just paid $80.
The people's band model where they'd start playing and have a band playing and then have a guitar and they'd be like, who here knows how to play the guitar? And then you get up and play and they'd be like, who here knows how to play the bass? And then keep adding people to a band until you had like 13 people on stage just like
playing different things.
Yeah, just like totally like throwing something out there. I don't know.
Well, that, I mean, again, you know, it's also Shakespeare and it's an earlier model. It's, I'm thinking of, you know, one of the, my favorite facts that I learned recently about like medieval drama is we know that they had these days long passion plays in Europe, like days and days of the story, not just passion plays, the story from of creation through the death of Jesus.
Oh my God.
And these were days and days long. Like, and so, you know, many theater companies and academics have tried to restage these, you know, and it's not all good, but you know, they're hours a day and they would be processional dramas. So they would be like saying this, York has a really famous cycle of plays. And so the city of York would essentially be transformed into like the biblical world.
Oh
so
God.
You'd move through the city to scene by scene. But the more research that's been done, it's like this happened every year. And people were not moving around a lot in medieval York.
Yeah.
So you saw this, you knew what was happening. So they were like, so more recent scholarship is like, people went to their favorite scenes and their favorite places, and they would leave and go get drunk or go to bed or go have food. And then they come back for the comic relief part. And there's a lot of comedy throughout these plays.
Yeah.
So there's no sense that like people would be like, oh, every time moved by the death of Jesus. Like they just showed up to see the crucifixion scene because the soldiers had a funny repartee.
Yeah, of course.
And then they'd like fuck off and be like, well, I've seen Jesus die like 18 times.
I've seen him come back. You know.
And I know how the play ends, right? Yeah. You know, that joke. So I love that idea that it's like your whole city becomes like a theater space, but you have all the agency over what you participate in and see, and you move around and you see your friends and, you know, you just go through. It's like my favorite meme, not even a meme. It's like a story that became famous via the internet about someone watching the Passion Play at like their home church. And like they couldn't, in the scene where the soldiers nailed Jesus to the cross, they like couldn't get it to work.
Yeah.
And finally, one of the soldiers improvises and go, we'll get you next time, Jesus. Such a beautiful Shakespearean moment. Like, yes, that probably did happen in medieval theater.
Yeah.
Like something got messed up or somebody puked. And they're like, we'll get you next time, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. And they will.
Yeah, they will. Next year, tune in.
And you know, I don't think that spirit has totally left humanity. I mean, you and I both ascribe to this homo ludens. Humanity is the playful subject.
Yeah.
Humanity is not the working being. It's not the economic, you know, homo... I know it's Homo economicus, Homo laborious.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact Latin.
Yeah, well, I'm Homo ludens. Mm-hmm. You know, the Huizinga idea that humans are the playful animal. The only animal that can laugh.
Though I don't love Huizinga. Like I read a thing about it, and I think this is an accurate critique. Huizinga, it's so much about competition for Huizinga.
Oh, really?
It's like kind of an aggressive form of play. That's more about like who wins, and creating the play circle is all about, you know, who's going to win and who's going to lose, who knows the rules the best. And then later, especially feminist scholars have critiqued that and said, hey, what if we take away the aggression?
I'd love to.
And we just think about like exploration and play and discovery, and like play is about testing things out, not necessarily about finding the answer. You know, it's more of an experimental realm.
I'd love to get into that because I only know Huizinga. I don't know any of the...
Well, he still remains the kind of expert, weirdly. Like there just hasn't been much concentrated work on play, though that's changing pretty quickly.
But yeah, I mean, I want to know though, is this the type of critique that like selectively reads him and then the next generation will go back and be like, you know, if we, because I remember
if we recuperate,
yeah, because maybe I'll belong to that second generation because I haven't read any of the later scholarship. I've only read Huizinga's Homo Ludens, and in it what really caught my attention was one, play is sacred. So in Huizinga it's always whatever is considered sacred has play as its engine, which in his mind is the establishment of rules so that they can be transgressed to continue the game in its development. Because if you only played by the rules all the time, the game gets old. So it's only by virtue of how far you can transgress the rules and maintain the spirit of enjoyment that the game will continue. To me, that's like absolutely insightful.
Because he points to also the very real fact of like you have a game, you have the rules, like D&D for example. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the rules,
right?
But and there are ways that you can break the rules that is disruptive and nobody's having a good time anymore, right? Like if you're like, I invent the gun, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, well now we've, but if you're like, I am a screwball inventor and I need to find this mysterious substance that will allow me to create explosions at will. Okay, then we can start.
And you recall other things in the game.
Yeah, that it's are like right, that. Yeah.
You have invented a slingshot.
Yeah.
Yes, you did discover gunpowder. Okay, fine, you do have a cylinder. And there
and now
is...
you just throw little lead balls and powder at people and hope for the best.
And you can do it once every 24 hours yeah. and it blows off your hand.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
You lose a finger each time.
It's like, all right, so that mechanism can then be installed in this machine yeah. that is the game, and it keeps building. And the game becomes more exciting.
Exactly.
And so, anyways, I guess I'm one of these recuperators that's like, not so fast, Sonny.
No,
like,
and I don't think they're dismissing his work entirely. I think they're just pointing to something, which I always felt when I was reading Huizinga, which was like, yeah. he was really trying to pin down play. And I guess it's more for me, like the examples he used were like about sports.
Oh, really?
Or about childhood. Like childhood games that yeah. he would observe. And it's also like hard because he's an adult watching children play games. You know?
He doesn't seem like a playful person.
He doesn't seem like a playful
person.
And
his writing is turgid.
It's very turgid.
It is. It. I mean, listen, all respect is due. This guy was writing in the 40s.
20s.
Oh, 20s?
Yeah.
I thought it was Nazi occupation. It was before that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Anyways, yeah. So it's Dutch Germanic scholarship. it's not the footloose and fancy free writing of a Bakhtin.
Yeah.
Of a no. Mikhail Bakhtin's Rabelais in His World. Well, Stella,
I still got a lot to say. Wow.
Well, this is great. You know, I have to say, and fine, one more thing, then we'll go into a song. Okay. The open theater idea, the theater, what was it the Diggers had? The frame of reference. And if you were, you know, the Diggers are known for being a psychedelic militancy outfit that provided free food and lodgings yeah. and clothes for the flower children in the Bay Area. And New York City. So they're the ones that ran the free stores and all that stuff. But this is so mime troupe, so theater kid. In order to access those food and the clothes and all that, you'd have to walk through this structure, which they called the free frame of reference. And so you'd walk in and that changed the frame of reference.
Of course.
And therefore, on the other side, it was a permanent
mm-hmm.
play.
Utopia.
It was
yeah.
Yeah. And that's not, put it like this, this is how little we've developed. We're still there when it comes to psychedelic festivals,
mm-hmm,
when it comes to utopian festivals, when it comes to like a Burning Man. They still rely on those old tropes.
Yeah, like the portal.
Yeah, and yeah. To various degrees of success. Some people really, I mean, listen, we're out here in the Bay Area. Some people have had their minds blown by Burning Man.
Yeah.
Some people have been transformed for the better
mm-hmm.
as a result. So, that's the John the Baptizer focus. Bringing it full circle. That is the baptizer. Now, it's not a person dunking you in water, which I think would be very successful out mm-hmm. of a phenomenological point of view, because that cold water does change. It creates physiological change.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. But I think that it's still possible to change someone's frame of reference and to create an ongoing theatrical performance site.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hope anyway. I mean, I think a good party gets about as close as I've been recently.
Well, Halloween's coming up.
Yeah, that's true.
And Halloween costuming it can be a pretty powerful yeah. alteration of consciousness.
Yeah, big time. I mean, again, medieval theater. You have all these great urban legends of, like, literal medieval urban legends of the person, you know, Timothy the barber becomes the devil for the play, and he can't stop being the devil.
He's really?
A menace. Yeah, this is an urban legend. It's a great, you know, it's the hook hand car. Who was phone? Yeah, these stories, or Jesus, you know, the Jesus character kind of continuing to be the Jesus character even after the play is over.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Stellar, what do you say we go into a song? Should I keep the recording going while we play the song and just cut it in? Would that be good, or should I stop the recording and then play the song and then have a new recording?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
And then I'll edit it in post.
Okay.
dodge that. Watch this. This is the heavy, heavy monster sound. The nuttiest sound around. So if you're coming off the street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your feet to the rockin'est, rock-steady beat of madness. One step beyond!
All right, everybody, welcome back. That was a four music block by some real heavy hitters. We had Africa Bumbata and Soul Sonic Force with Planet Rock. We had Culture Beats, Mr. Vane, followed by Madness, One Step Beyond. And then rounding things out, we had Pressure Drop from the Harder They Come soundtrack.
Hooray.
Jimmy Cliff. Yeah, let me tell you. I don't know if Jimmy Cliff is the artist. Jimmy Cliff is the artist there, but wow. What's
that movie? I don't know that movie.
The Heart of the Come. Yeah, we watched it. We've seen it a few times. Jeffrey Oops. Shows it. It's based in Jamaica, and it's the story of a thief who teams up with a music producer, I think, to make a hit record.
Oh, cool.
Oh, it's such a great one. One of the greatest soundtracks ever recorded, yeah. If you ask me.
I like it when movies soundtracks are good, not because it's like better than the movie, but because they just are, it's like a great blending of
they brought in Jimmy Cliff as one of the all-time greats of dub reggae, and
yeah,
I think he actually stars in the movie too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
Now, please.
No.
I just have a funny question that has occurred to me now that you're talking about Jimmy Cliff starring in this. Mm-hmm. To me, it's hard to understand how someone like a musician or even a professional sports player who is interviewed a lot could be bad at acting. Like, you see this a lot. You'll see, like, in commercials or movies. Okay, a notable example, right? Michael Jordan was excellent in Space Jam. It was a great film. Everybody loved it. People had crushes on Lola Bunny. Then they tried.
They still do. They still do.
Then they tried to do it again with LeBron, you know, a sports player in some ways of equal stature, though as a child of the 90s, certainly no one can beat Michael Jordan. And it was a flop, and he was not good in it. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that.
With
I just
Lola
heard.
Bunny in it?
Yeah, but I think they like de-sexed her. You know,
well,
she was like
problem.
Less hot. But I don't understand that because, like, especially musicians, if they're successful, it's a charisma thing. And same with the professional athletes, especially now. They are interviewed. They have to speak about themselves and others. So I don't know what that is that when suddenly they're asked to be in a film or a TV show or a commercial where they just like, do. I don't know.
You know, as someone who avoids being on camera or in front of a camera,
yeah.
I have no insight because I have no desire to act at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm not.
But I've heard you like read poetry before. You know what I mean? And like there's an instinct there mm-hmm. that is not like howl America. You know, I don't know. It's a funny.
Well, I'm just glad that you didn't say I have poetry voice, which
Poetry voice.
Huh.
Do you know? Woman. Whoa, man.
No. Poetry voice is illegal. And I have to say, this Saturday we are leading a drift through Golden Gate Park. And you're asking, what's the segue here? Well, Solari and I founded an affiliate group for the Order of St. George's Horse here in San Francisco called the Society for the Preservation of Aimless Wandering. And our first event was 2 weeks ago, and we did a North Beach drift. So we went to Specs, we went to Vesuvio, and, you know, as in the middle of our drift, one of the strangers who joined us said, "Oi, what's City Lights?" I said, well, this is the 68th year anniversary of the Six Gallery reading where mm-hmm. Ginsberg debuted Howl. Mm-hmm. So let's all go into City Lights. And the one rule I have is everyone can steal one thing. That's it. Just the theme of the night was crime.
They can't catch all of us.
They can't catch all of us at once. So anyways, we go upstairs and I was like,
To the poetry room.
And I said, all right, everybody, just grab a book off the wall, go to a random page, and we're gonna see what the muse has in store for us. And it was beautiful. We had probably 20 people in there,
yeah,
in a circle,
fully around the room,
just bouncing off on each other. And it was great because someone had picked up Ginsberg's Howl,
yeah,
and just started reading the Moloch verses, and I thought that was great. But I should say, you know, we used some random website, yeah. meetup.com, whatever that is, and just posted the event on there, and we're gonna see, hey, whatever. Turns out it was huge. We had like 100 members join, 30 people RSVP'd.
Yeah, people came and went, you know, but there was like a core group probably of like 8 or 10 people who stayed for 5 hours.
Yeah,
you know?
And we ended at Lee Po.
Mm-hmm.
Can't beat that.
I mean, and Mr. Bings.
Mr. Banks. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was where we ended.
It was before a real was pub very, crawl.
I had a full day hangover after that.
Yeah. I didn't
eat my noodles.
No, you did. So before we do a pub crawl like this, you got to have a big meal.
Big carb meal.
And
especially.
Stella did not eat her noodles.
I couldn't finish my
and
noodles.
Paid the price.
I did. I had a 24-hour hangover.
Yeah.
I was bad.
And I was larking about. I was up and at them.
But we're doing a different one.
That's right. Tomorrow, we're walking the length of Golden Gate Park. And I couldn't be more excited about it.
Yeah. And, you know, much like the Five Boroughs Walk, which we've discussed on here before, mm-hmm. or Peking Duck, we are walking the length of Golden Gate Park.
That's right.
Footnote.
That's the cover story. We're not going
to
make
anybody ever done this? Yeah.
So,
we've done it a number of times.
We've done it, yeah. We've
you and I. And with Eric as well.
That's right. Yeah. Will we make it? Who knows? And who cares, frankly? That's not the point. That is to bring people in the door.
Exactly.
Step right up, everybody. Step right up. We're going to walk the length of Golden Gate Park. Yeah, going to have a blast, everybody.
See the sights.
But that's not the aim. Aim is to cultivate friendship amongst people, friends we haven't met yet.
Exactly.
Not strangers, but friends we haven't met.
And, you know, Golden Gate Park is, I mean, I talk a lot in here about, like, all the shortcomings of the United States, but man, Golden Gate Park is a testament to humanity's something.
It's a good one.
And because I'm still discovering places. Like a few months ago, we ended up doing like the little pedal boat in the Stowe Lake. And I was like, I didn't even know this was an option.
I forgot about
like,
the paddle
it's
boat.
It's so expansive. And we were drinking wine out of tiny cups. I mean, it was just a joyous little jaunt. And the park has so many of those. You know, people have their favorite spaces. And I don't know what they are. You know, I have my favorite spaces, but I want to know about other people's favorite spaces. So I'm really hoping that part of the journey tomorrow will be people being like, oh, no, let's just quickly go over here and see how cool it is over here. You know, letting us see, sharing that expansiveness. Because somehow, even though it's like, you look at it on a map and it's big, but it doesn't seem that big. But there's so many hidden little corners and hidey holes there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, we also, on the same time that we did the lake, we saw the bison. Bison preserve. And my friend who I went camping with does archery there. They have like an archery range.
Okay.
I mean, wow.
Sign me up, frankly. Yeah. I couldn't be more excited.
I'm coming.
Yeah.
RSVP one, me.
RSVP two, me. And I think we made some converts.
I think so.
During
the
last one.
People were interested in Nameless Wandering.
Mm-hmm.
It took us a while, I'll admit it, here on the air. Coming up with that name was a labor because we have so many precedents, but a lot of the ones, like the one in Amsterdam, which you've mentioned before, the
Vondelpark Oceanographic Society.
There's no oceans in Vondelpark or anywhere near there.
No, the ocean's too close. The great thing about the Amsterdam one is there's no ocean in Vondelpark.
Exactly. That's what I was saying.
Golden Gate Park, sadly.
Oh, it does have the ocean.
Abuts an ocean.
So that's what I mean. We had these names that were, you know, funny and true, but we had to come up with something. That was also intelligible, you know. We had a lot of ones that seemed a little, you know, funny words like gutter or trash.
Gutter trash.
It's different. People would have expected something very different.
I think we had some duds. Do you remember any of the names that we rejected?
Oh, no. Not really. Drift. I was like really hung up on the word drift. It didn't make it in there. Oh, no, it didn't.
No, but the things we do are drifts.
Yeah.
So aimless wandering, I think, gets to a... Oh, and then someone came up to me during the last one and was like, I love the fact that you used aimless wandering in the title of your group because I just read something in the New York Times about how important aimlessness is. And I was like, what's the New York Times? I was like, I'm sorry, I don't read that online magazine.
John the Baptist response.
but I thought, okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this resonated in that way.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, hey, I'll take what I can get. As long as it's aimless wandering, I mean, I'm not going to be picky about where you came to it from.
It has to be aimless.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be interesting to see, because I think I also, in Golden Gate, like tend to take similar routes.
Yeah, me too.
So I think I'll have to actively try not to do that.
Well, try and keep me away from what I call the Grand Promenade, is a long green that stretches out. It almost looks like a golf course, and it's where everybody barbecues and plays the beer bong Olympics.
People have like wedding receptions there. We saw that last time.
I don't know if the regulations are different or if it's just a open patch or maybe it has a name that people can identify. I have no idea why everyone crowds into that one area.
And like with supplies. Like it's not.
I don't know how they cart them in either. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think you probably just carry
it. Can you park around there? Maybe I've seen cars around there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, not anywhere like in the park, but I mean, it might be close to a road or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do want to make enough friends one day to have whatever that beer keg sport is. Oh, it's kickball.
Yeah, they play kickball, it's and it's like kickball. You have to play it with one of your hands to be holding a cup, a solo cup, full of beer.
I want to have enough friends to do that one day, Stella. I do. And I'm going to have to ask somebody to show me. And I'm too shy to join someone else's game.
Well, yeah, because they, you know, there's nothing more terrifying than seeing like 30 people who seem to be friends. Like it's that should be an invitation. That should be like, oh, they won't notice
31,
one more.
31, yeah.
But it's somehow worse than if you see like 3 people having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
human
know.
Psychology.
I know. But it's just like, what? What if it's like a company picnic or something? I don't know.
Then you can just go in and be like, hey, I'm Jim from
remote work.
From remote work.
I'm from remote work.
I got full plastic surgery since the last time you saw me.
On remote work. Yeah.
I run the Slack channel. I don't even know what Slack is. People always talk to me about Slack, and I'm like,
Cut me some Slack, Jack. Hmm. That's what I say. Subgenius must have Slack. Everyone knows that.
Well, it's been decried by this internet forum.
Decried. Decrepit.
That's not the right word.
Solaria, I'm going to attempt the impossible here.
Uh-oh.
And
accept a call?
No. Oh. I mean, that's implausible. This is impossible. 2 weeks ago, we were on air and not... It wasn't going out to anybody. So it was you and I.
It was going out to somebody, but it wasn't recorded.
Right. It wasn't recorded. It was going out live, but it wasn't recorded. I'm going to try to return to the topic of conversation there because I feel like I had more to say. And what is the French expression? The spirit of the stairs?
Yeah.
Esprit d'escalier.
L'esprit d'escalier.
Escalier.
Which is when you are leaving and you're going down the stairs and you think, oh, I know exactly what I should have said.
I had that with the conversation, which was about how Chinatown has a lot of personality and there's a lot of options, different food, different types of drinking venues, different shops. You just have there's a lot of character there and a lot of difference and a lot of heterogeneity. And so Chinatowns are always a blast. Whereas Little Italy's tend to be kind of a drag. Like I'm thinking of San Francisco has a Little Italy, Philadelphia has a Little Italy, New York City has a Little Italy. And usually it's just restaurants. It's not like you get Italian espresso shops, you know, or I guess you'd call it like a bistro.
And you don't, and the Italian restaurants you get are also like American Italian. So like Chinatown, I feel like you do get Chinese American food, but it's also one of the places where you can go and get like actual regional dishes from across the gigantic country.
Boston has a Little Italy and it's just eating establishments.
And it's because of like Europe, you know, as like a figure of imagination.
But you don't
get expensive.
Yeah, you don't get regional Italian cuisine. You don't get. I mean, I'd love a place.
No, we did last time we were in New York. We did have that very funny experience where we were walking through Little Italy to get somewhere else.
Yeah.
And one of the sort of street hawker guys who was trying to get us to come to the restaurant was like, in a very thick European Italian accent, was like, "Come for lunch." And then we're like, "Oh no, thank you." And he goes, "Forget about it." Like he was acting like he's a genuine Italian man who came to New York City. But then he had to put on Godfather American Italian for the tourists.
To make
and
it
I
legible.
Was like, I love it.
Yeah. But then we ended up going to a Korean boba shop in Little Italy.
Little Italy.
Which was kind of interesting. But what would you call, I mean, shit, you wrote a guidebook for Italy. So I imagine you'd know. What do you call where you know, the places we've summered in Italy, you know? What do you call the places where we would walk in and you'd throw a euro coin on the table, a tobacco? You throw a euro coin. You throw a 1 euro coin and they come back. You wouldn't even say what you wanted. It'd be 1 euro coin on the table and they'd come back with an espresso.
Or you say in Italy, you just say un caffè.
Un caffè.
And that's just default espresso.
Here is my little gift I gave myself. A pretension gift I gave myself after coming back from Italy so many years ago. It's not espresso.
No.
It's espresso.
Espresso.
May I have one espresso? It's an S.
Un espresso.
And it's an inward.
Yeah.
Espresso.
An inhalation.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my little gift I've given myself. And soon I'm going to give myself the gift of saying ciao to people. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to do it.
I say it all the time because it's like a pan-European thing now.
It's a pan-European.
You say it in Spain, you say it in the Netherlands.
But it's
like,
also
you just
very
ciao, 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 ciao.
Hollywood.
Well, in the U.S. it is. But genuinely, like I was noticing this last time I was in Spain.
Ciao.
Everyone says, they're speaking in Spanish, and at the end they go, ah, ciao. And it's like, okay, ciao.
Yeah, ciao. Come on. Everyone likes to say ciao. Ciao.
Or in Rome, they have the great thing where they have kept the Latin for goodbye, which is, or the goodbye hello of Latin, which is salve. So still in Rome, you hear people say salve, salve.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's great. I love it. Yeah. A little Latin sneaking in.
Yeah.
I guess it's like howdy in the United States.
Howdy is not a goodbye, though. It's like aloha.
Salve is like aloha.
It's close,
like ciao.
It's close.
No, ciao is only goodbye. You're right.
Yeah. It's closer to aloha. So this is what I want to say, that Chinatown, you can really get into some stuff. Little Italy just doesn't have the same depth. Or have you ever heard of like a Little Athens? I'd love like a Greek part of you have heard of a Little Athens?
Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, I've only seen... So I went recently in San Francisco to the Greek Food Festival.
Oh!
Which is one of these Greek Orthodox churches. So, when I was in high school in Virginia, there was a Greek Food Festival and a Lebanese Food Festival, which were like my favorite times of year. But they were both held by Greek or Lebanese churches. So I think like in the States, it's often around a religious community rather than like a neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like because people live all over, but they all come to this one church. And so once a year they have the Greek Food Festival or whatever.
I'm trying to think, when we were in Amsterdam, is there like a Little America town? Well,
no.
No one in America is an imperialist power. They probably just have military bases.
I mean, you know, in Amsterdam, they have, it's not like a concentrated area, but they have a lot of
Surinamese
and Indonesian.
Well, we stayed out in the Little Surinamese area, Little Suriname. What was the name of that?
Oh, yeah, in Yavapline.
Yavapline, yeah, that's Little Suriname.
Yeah, Java is Indonesia.
Needless to say, it's where the food's affordable and people hang out all night, and it has a very different atmosphere. Though, I think that really, if you came to San Francisco and you wanted a different ambiance, I'd point you towards the Castro. Of all the neighborhoods that have a vivid personality and character and the whole thing, I think the Castro takes the cake. And I've been meaning to explore more there.
And I mean, I think also the Mission.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. We live in the Mission.
Yeah,
sorry.
So it doesn't seem so strange.
I take it for granted.
You know, I remember, you know, both of our mothers have been out here and they have both commented on how it feels like a totally different country, you know, because there's so much Central and South American, mostly Central American culture here. That it really is just, it feels very different than you go, you know, five blocks east and you're in Noe with like strollers
Why
or whatever.
Why do I hate Noe?
Why? I don't like strollers.
No, really, I don't like being there. Noe bothers me.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have such a response to it, but I was talking to our friend Mac on the show and Mac's like, oh, Noe's awful. It's like, wow.
No, I mean, it's the universe next door, honestly, like both physically and mentally.
Yeah,
like,
it's totally different.
Like we, you know, whoever we think we are as subjects. You know, there are people who we probably are friends with or were friends with who that is like the ideal place for them to live. So to me, it's the closeness of that being my life that makes it a little bit upsetting.
No,
I'm like,
thanks.
Ugh, imagine me like getting a $6 cappuccino, which I do in the Mission.
Oh, I was about to say, ritual's $8.
No, but then also like having a baby and a dog, you know,
that
to me is like, you have to, like, that's the profile I would feel like I had to cut.
Yeah.
Up there.
Yeah, that is what it would be.
Which is antithetical to everything I want in life.
And they don't even have good bike lanes. At least here in Valencia, we have the death corridor. At least we have the straightaway of doom. I'm talking here about the bike lane they've put in. And by the time you listen to the show, I assume they will have deconstructed it because it was just far too many fatalities.
Yeah, I saw another article today about how now restaurant owners are adding to the complaints because it's eliminated parking and eliminated accessibility and they're like losing business. So.
It's cockamamie.
Ridiculous.
Totally cockamamie.
Though, we were talking about a drift.
What's that?
You were talking about a drift. Your Golden Gate.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to say more about Chinatown's specificity.
Oh, no, that was it. I have to say that this year I didn't get to do something I try to do every year, which is I teach on the road every year in my Holy Hipsters class.
The Jack Kerouac book.
And not the Aldous Huxley book of a similar name, which is Along the Road.
Oh.
Or the Jack London book, On the Road.
Or the Camino book by Jason called, isn't that called like?
On the Camino.
On the Camino.
Which is different. On the Road.
But
So every year, instead of reading it, I listen to the audiobook and walk around town. And this year, I'll cut to the chase here. I was just too tired. I'd come home after work and I'd get home around 6. And I don't know what it is, but for some reason, I just couldn't muster the strength. Mm. And all I wanted to do was eat dinner with you, make a few jokes, crack off a few one-liners, okay? Have a nice, what we call a tequila in the house, a tequi-qui. And in one of the earthenware vessels made for us by our friend Manu, and go to bed.
Maybe watch 10 minutes of Manos Hands of Fate.
Manos. No, the only the Mystery Science Theater 3000. And then fall asleep while Mystery Science Theater 3000 is also cracking jokes. So, and I just, I couldn't do it this year. So maybe next year.
Or maybe in the next few weeks.
Well,
you don't want to do it
anymore. I don't want to do it.
You did it. You've done it.
Yeah. Yeah. I missed it and I can live with that sadness.
Oh, okay.
And persist and continue to move on.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
All right, Stella, our time is getting short here.
Oh, no.
I know. I have to say, kudos. We went that first 45 minutes without a single break. Eunice, you came back charged up.
I had a lot to say.
Charged. And,
or not even like a lot to say. I just wanted to be doing it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I do.
I didn't come in with like talking points.
No, we never do, believe it or not, listeners. Let me tell you, I didn't hear enough Stellaria. I wait each week for more Stellaria. I listen to old episodes to hear Stellaria.
Your opinions.
And here I got it. And I can't say there's anything better in this universe. All right, so we're going to go out with a few tunes. And I'm going to say those tunes here now live.
Good.
So I...
So I know what they are later in post.
Right. Which, you know, is important. All right, everybody. This has been your favorite friends, JoJo and Stellaria.
What is... You can unclip your mic and talk into it.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. You've been listening to your favorite friends, Stellaria and JoJo, here on...
This is Neon Shrines.
We're going to go out with three cuts from the same musician.
Deep cut.
Arthur, I would say.
Arthur?
The same... What do they call it? Like someone who's a visionary, who does everything themselves.
Yeah, an auteur. Yeah.
An auteur. So this is one of the Grandmasters of the Order.
Oh, boy.
And...
Get ready, everybody. This is great.
We're going to play some cuts after his Hank and Dad 2 album, Making Friends.
Is it my favorite one?
Which one do you want to hear?
Enemy Kids.
Enemy Kids it is. So we're going to start with Enemy Kids. From there, we're going to go into Invite Me Over.
Oh!
And then we're going to end with Meet My Friends.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, everybody. This
has
been great.
Probably the best music in the world.
This has been great. Thanks for listening to Neon Shrines, and see you next week, hopefully.
Hopefully on the airwaves.
On the airwaves. All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Never going to learn, are you?
What do you mean?
I mean, no matter what you say, what you do, you and me are gonna fight when that bell rings at 3 o'clock.
Can't we be friends? Can't we even try?
You and me, friends. Amen. Now I'm gonna have to do something to work it off.
Work it off?
You and me, we're gonna have a fight today, after school. 3 o'clock in the parking lot. You try and run, I'm gonna track you down. You go to a teacher, it's only gonna get worse. You sneak home, be under your bed. You and me, 3 o'clock.
Enemy kids coming to get you. Enemy kids, I feel no good. Squash snake in the middle of the road.
Said I'll be your best to microwave for later when we need a hot snack to munch on, or potato chips to crunch on. We all high-fived and I gave a big grin. This posse was alive and ready to begin. You should have seen the people shaking and moving and grooving and sweating and flowing and rocking. And I said, don't people stopping? And they were snacking and laughing and doing African dancing and praising and chewing and belching and hopping. I said, this party is bright. Thank you for having me over tonight. My night turned out like a four-leaf clover because I asked you to invite me over. I'll be your best friend if you invite me over. Said I'll be your best friend if you invite me over. I'll be your best friend if you invite me over. Said I'll be your best friend if you invite me over.
What's up, everybody? This is your main man, JoJo, here with Stellaria, who's really at wit's end, trying to do all the audio editing work. But I'm just popping in here to explain that what you just heard was a impromptu episode of Neon Shrines. We went in the studio, we had our own equipment, we recorded, and then got the hell out of there. And then we got the news that the radio was back on the air. So we scooted back to the studio and recorded another show. So two shows one day. Why? We just can't get enough
of
it.
It's fun. We like it.
We like it. What we don't like is recording. No, what we don't like is editing the audio after.
It's a lot of goofery over here on GarageBand.
A lot of tomfoolery. All right, everybody. So enjoy this next episode of Neon Shrines.
Hear that, everybody? Do you hear that noise?
We interrupt this episode of Neon Shrines for another episode of Neon Shrines.
That's right. Back to back to back. And the cracking of the can, the ceremonial opening.
Of the ablutions
and absolutions of the show. This is Neon Shrines, a show of pilgrimage and power spots. You're here with your favorite friends.
Stella.
And JoJo. Wow, I have to say, I'm energized. I'm juiced. Be back in the studio, and it's not just the delicious Ocha Oi tea I'm drinking. It's Radio Valencia. That's right, back in action, doing its thing, live on radio.
Big shout out to BFF for figuring it all out.
Wow, I can't ditto that enough. Thanks a lot.
So exciting.
Well, this week we have a spectacular show because we are going to be dredging our subconscious to bring up to the fore all of the topics that we rarely get to discuss.
Oh, what are those?
Well, I'm not telling. That is part of the magic here. But really, I just want to say thank you to everyone out there who has put in their time and energy to bring Radio Valencia back on the airwaves. We've mentioned it before, but it's painful to have a show and to not be able to perform that show live every Friday.
I just stop thinking on Fridays if I don't have it.
Well, that's right. I do lay comatose in my bed during the 2-hour slot that we would be broadcasting.
Yeah, in the radio coffin.
That's right. Just white noise.
But here we are again.
That's right.
All is well in the world.
God is in his place and all is right in heaven. So today I was hoping, Stellaria, with your leave, with your blessing, playing...
I was like, you want me to leave?
No, stick around, would you? Playing some of our favorite tracks from Hank and Dad.
Oh, yeah.
It's long overdue. Jeb is a grandmaster in the Order of St. George's Horse, someone who we look to for wisdom, for guidance, for visions. And I really think that his Hank and Dad albums, I think there's three.
Oh, wow.
Have just crystallized so much of what is important to us here on Neon Shrines and in the Order.
It's true.
Particularly being absolutely unrelenting and refusing to negotiate when it comes to your own creative vision.
Mm-hmm.
Hank and Dad is something that, the muse swept him up and he stayed in the bosom of the muse for years and dumped all his extra money and cash and energy into realizing this project. And then, speaking to him and being really close to him, being an intimate friend as we have
been.
And
he's
been
a guest on the show. One of our early shows.
That's right. And I remember talking to him when he produced the final album. He said, that's that. That's the project. Mm. That's what it is. And then he released himself to be available for other creative projects. And I always admired his sense of finality.
Yeah, that he had something to say and he said it.
That's right.
That's that.
Yeah, and he felt obliged to move on after he completed the cycle.
Well, I have to say, we're going to listen to it, but completing the cycle or not, every time I listen to it, I hear it again for the first time. It's like a true storytelling loop that you enter into, a world.
Yeah.
A world, interestingly, that I never really inhabited, but I still feel like I'm a part of, thanks to Hank and Dad.
I mean, could you give some background then? What is your, as an outsider, what is it you see when you look into the crystal ball of Hank and Dad?
I see the image of a 90s suburban U.S. childhood, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But also one that is kind of aware of its own simulacral nature. So it's not an autobiographical story that Hank and Dad are telling here. It's a plausible reconstruction of a mythical but very real past, because it's also about the portrayal of this particular genre, 80s, 90s American childhood in the suburbs, as depicted in film and TV.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a self-aware simulacra.
Yeah, well, in another way, I also see it as Jeb's gift to himself. I see it as very psychoanalytic in a sense of returning to the primal scene of one's adolescent development.
Yeah.
And parsing out the different threads that really shaped him as a human.
Yeah.
And so on one level, I think you could call it sort of a party record. It's a parody of so much of that music and popular culture of the 1980s and 90s. But on another level, when you look at the effort put into it, it transcends mere parody and becomes more of an engagement, I think, with memory.
Yeah.
And what it means to live in the thrall of, the characters and entertainment that you grew up with. So I think we could talk this thing to death. I think we should just play a track, right?
Probably.
And then come back and then reflect on what it is.
Yeah. Do you want to do a line-by-line analysis?
A line-by-line analysis.
To hear.
Which Hank and Dad deserves, no doubt. So this is Don't Do Snacks, which is it's just good advice to start. but more than that, it's just fun. All right, everybody. See you after Don't Do Snacks.
Do Mention you should eat carrot sticks from the produce section, hitting the treadmills and hitting the gym instead of snacking and snapping into a Slim Jim. Don't open up a bag, pop open a lid. You should be peeling some rinds or removing the skin of potatoes, kiwis, or grapefruit. No unwinding gelatinous rolled up fruit. Nutritional facts are on the backs of the snack pack. Vitamins and minerals are what those rotten snacks lack. Now it's time to make your decision, a choice to make in favor of nutrition. Veggies and fruits are the way to go. When it comes to snacks, just say no.
Don't. gang, coffin. Everybody say catching, catching a cold,
a cold. Hey bro, we caught a cold, but we hope you're doing fine. But if you do catch a cold, we want you to know it's a normal part of life. Hey, bro, we caught a cold, but we hope you're doing fine. But if you do catch a cold, we want you to know it's a normal part of life.
Hit it! Got a nasty cold today. You got a runny nose, it won't go away.
If you're hooking up alone,
don't let it ruin your fun. Just get yourself the proper medication.
I've been sneezing, I got a runny nose.
Antihistamine is what I chose.
Take a decongestant.
For sinus congestion.
A cough suppressor will suppress your cough.
For a quick fix, take a cough drop.
For classic fever symptoms,
ibuprofen or acetaminophen.
Keep a box of tissues on your nightstand. Rub sanitizer on your hands.
Most of all, just get some bed rest.
And now let's party with our party guests. Hey, hey, everybody say one.
One.
Cough one time. Say two.
Two.
Cough two times. Say three.
Three.
Cough three times. Say four.
Four.
Cough five times. And if you got the sniffles too, you gotta get your snot and mucus out. Blow your nose into a tissue. All the girls better drink some vitamin C from the fluids in your cup. You gotta pop a cough drop to drop your cough and then apply a vapor rub. Up! I'm Puppy Juice, laying down truth.
Donovan indeed, the ladies love me.
My name is Buck Bobbin and I never saw Brockin.
This much is true, I am Humphrey Q.
I'm Jano Smith with the lyrical gift.
For all of you who are on the mend, here's a rhyme about taking the lozenge.
Pop a cough drop to drop your cough. Pop a cough drop to drop your cough.
If you're gonna cough till the break of dawn, at the count of three, just cough along.
One, two, three, hit it.
Hey, everybody say one.
One.
Cough one time. Say two.
Two.
Cough two times. Say three.
Three.
Cough three times. All the guys with a cough better clear your throat. And if you got the sniffles too, you got to get your snot and mucus out. Blow your nose into a tissue. All the girls better drink some vitamin C from the fluids in your cup. You got to pop a cough drop to drop your cough and then apply a vapor rub. Yeah. To say,
I caught my cold on the 4th of May.
I'm Puppet Juice Free, I guarantee. My cold came to me in January.
I'm Donovan D, listen to me. I caught my cold on June 13.
My name is Buck Bobbin and I haven't stopped coughing since the first day of winter when the soul started dropping.
Well, I'm Humphrey Q and you must remember that I caught my cold in early November.
I'm Jano Smith, listen to this. I caught my cold on April 5th.
Now we got a little game we want to play with you. Pay attention, I'll tell you what to do. We're gonna cough together, cough out loud. Cough at the same time, starting now. Let me hear your cough. Let me hear that cough.
It's a castle or a sanctuary. The fort that I build is where I want to be. Now your fort has become a transport, and your sacred space begins to transform. It could be a spaceship or a space station, or a bungalow in a tropical location. Or you're in Antarctica on an expedition, staying warm and fulfilling your mission. Or 20,000 feet under the sea, relaxing like Nemo in your submarine, sitting in a treehouse and or village, or a medieval cathedral about to be pillaged, chilling in the cabin of a 100-foot yacht. A fort can be whatever you want. Well, I know what I'm saying might sound a little crazy, but hear me out, cause I think that maybe if you consider my words might be right, you'll improve your existence and change your life. Making believe and pretending with your brain is a million times better than video games. So don't be afraid to build a fort. You'll find it to be much better than sport. Dismiss those feelings of shame and guilt. You're the lord of the manor, be proud of what you built. So the next time you get home from the food court, head down to the basement and build a fort. From a futon, I'm a proud promoter, always indoors. The joy that comes from building a fort. 34, there ain't nothing wrong with building a fort with a mattress from a futon. I'm a proud promoter, always indoors. The joy that comes from building a fort.
Oh my God. Isn't that just a banger?
You know what it is? It's memories. It makes you nostalgic for memories you don't have.
Well, I have those memories.
Building a fort?
Yeah. I have an older brother. Building a fort goes without saying. I remember, this is gross. One time, my brother and I were playing in the house, and of course, every object can be made into a gun. So you have, the easiest one is a stick. Stick outside, always going to be a gun, maybe a sword.
Especially if it's got little, like, perpendicular parts.
Yeah, that's the trigger. And then I think my parents finally got hip and just bought us plastic
guns of every sort. Squirt guns, super soakers, and then the ones that you have inside that you they pop. So you put in like little cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll snap. Pop guns. Yeah, pop guns. And then you just had ones that made noise. Anyways, chasing each other around the house, and my brother picked up a stick, and I was like, da, 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 behind him, running to the fort, ran into the fort and jumped on the couch, and the stick went through his hands and ended up going into his shoulder because he was holding it shoulder high. It goes into his shoulder. I remember like looking at, you know, my brother with the blood running down his chest, and he went to our parents. We're like, my parents were like, okay, hold on. Let me pull this stick out your shoulder and, you know, see if we can make this work.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, hey, that's the joy of having two boys running around the house. It's permanent war. It's war in the house.
I mean, my sister was 4 years older than me, so we didn't have that close of play. We played together, but I always remember, probably the earliest I can remember doing this is in elementary school, maybe like second or third grade, like playing orphans, which I think might be like a gendered girl version of playing guns. But it wasn't just like, oh no, look at us, we're poor orphans. It's like, we're orphans. We've made it. We've found our own home. We've set it up. I'm cooking garlic soup and you are going out to steal from all the people because we're poor. Like, it was this whole universe of like street urchin.
Okay. I've never heard of playing orphan before.
Oh, man.
It was big in your house.
Yeah, I mean, in my friendship group.
Oh, not you. Okay, I thought you said your sister.
No, this was with my school friends because we had, you know, I was in Singapore and we had like basically recess was just like out in the rainforest. And so you could find like edible things. Like they had honeysuckle, they had like those little like onion grass that you could find little tiny onion bulbs and just gnaw on those.
I think it's an inventive way for young women to get together and explain how they were thrown in the same circumstances.
Yeah.
We're all orphans. Yeah. Like, and it takes care of backstory.
We're all orphans. You know,
it's like
the D&D thing.
It's very
you meet
present.
In a pub. Yeah. We're all orphans.
It's very present oriented, which is like, what are we going to do together now that we've found each other?
Exactly.
And we'll get into backstories later, but like right now we need onion garlic soup. Or what have you. So what are you laughing at? I can't read it that far. I'm not wearing my reading glasses.
So I've been trying to get in touch with the author of the songs we just listened to.
Of Hank and Dad. You're trying to get into the mind of Jeb Innerlandy.
So I texted, we need you on the show to talk about the origin of Hank and Dad.
Yeah.
And this person finally texted back and wrote, I think you have the wrong number, lol. Which I'm not sure. That is a little bit of the humor of our friend.
It is
the wrong number.
It is.
It's the wrong number, according to the angels.
Yeah, because Jeb changed his number recently.
Well, that will explain it.
That will explain it. But yeah, I have to say, all praise to young people who spend their time creating worlds. All praise to the people who, if you know, as Hank and as the song goes, you're 34, what's wrong with building a fort? You know, if only 34-year-olds could muster the strength it takes to build a fort.
If only.
Yeah.
Now, was it a pillow fort? Was it a wooden fort?
Always pillow. And, in fact, there is a sort of legend in my family about... I thought that was Jeb there. There's a legend in my family about, you know, my brother and I grew up. He's just a year older than me. So we would spend our time basically, as I said, permanent war. Whenever we were not in school, we'd go home and... I think if you opened our drawers, it was nothing but camo, like different colors of camo. I'm from South Florida, and it was like the classic green, brown, black camo. But then we had urban camo, which was gray and black and white.
Yeah.
Then we had tiger style, you know, whatever. We had all the different camos. And, you know, we'd black our face, you know, we'd put the war paint on and all that stuff.
Lines or
yeah.
Whatever.
And what we would do is then go out into the neighborhood and look for other kids imagining things and try to take over their imaginative
enemy
world.
Enemy kids.
Yeah.
Another Hank and Dad classic.
And our neighbors were these two really wonderful women, these two young girls. And they were like the same ages as
us.
So it was natural that we were friends.
Of course.
But we just didn't occupy the same imaginal universe.
Right. They were playing orphans.
And
they're like, why did these gun-toting weirdos show up to my orphanage?
Yeah, maybe something like that. And I remember they had a hideout. We were more nomadic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had bikes. So we would just kind of, you know, we would just circulate. But they had this fort. And I remember it was a Sunday, and we knew they would be in their fort, which was like in brush. There's like a lot of scrub.
I'm telling you, they were playing Orphanage.
Okay, playing Orphanage. And we showed up, and they had this beautiful arch. You walked in, and there was like a tree that would arch above, yeah. Created a natural entranceway. And we walked in. And said, hey, everyone out, up against the wall. And we were going to, like, execute them for some reason.
Oh, boy.
And they're like, you have to get out. And we're like, no, we don't. We own this fort now.
Uh-oh.
And then I drew my Nerf gun.
Uh-oh.
You know, the stakes were pretty high. And they said, get out now. And my brother jumped up on the arch. And I don't know if he pulled it down or it broke under his weight. And that thing came crashing down. And we scrabbled out of there.
Yeah,
we got the hell out.
More damage than you could have imagined.
And then we were like, they'll never find us. We were like right on our bikes, like they're literally our neighbors, like biking into the sunset, and we were like, we're scot-free.
They'll never know who we really were.
Yeah, because I guess if you play hard enough, you're fully there.
Oh, yeah.
There's no part of your mind that's drawing you back.
No.
And I think young kids really can lose themselves in the imagination. And I think that's what allows them, if they go to Disney World, to participate in what they know full well is an imaginative play. But I think it allows them to get absorbed in scary movies or in, you know, when the suitmation people come out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it allows them to become, you know, to quiet that part of their mind that, that insists on, you know, responsible, you know, interaction with what the reality principle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can still remember storylines from games that I played, you know, like fully imagined realities. And I'm like, oh, no, but of course, that particular character and that particular character had beef.
Yeah.
Because I would always, you know, I'd return
In your imagination
story.
World.
Yeah, yeah.
In your play pretend world.
Right. So I had these, like, toy horses, like, very realistic toy horses.
Yeah.
And other realistic toy animals. But the horses, I think because they were biggest, like, I never was really a horse person, but the horses were bigger. So I think they were the leads just for that simple reason.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drama. They were always, because, like, it's my bedroom, right? And so they're going from one end of the bedroom to the other. Oh, my.
Oh, that was one of these explosions in the mission.
Oh, I don't like
I'm
that.
I'm glad. Oh, my. Did you see me? I jumped up in the air with both feet and both hands like an old-timey prospector.
Everybody's just looking around.
Dude, you didn't see this, but in the studio, my earphones flew off my head and landed back
and
on.
Did a little spin, and then they landed right back on.
We hear that all the time, and we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It sounds like a small... I mean, one time we were on the street and we saw it,
oh, yeah.
And it seemed like a flashbang.
Yeah.
I think that the... I think that the... What did he say?
He said, somebody's litting off fucking bombs over here. I don't think that's what's happening.
I do think it is a flashbang.
Yeah, but it's one.
Yeah. I think they throw it out the side of a car and scoot away. What's so funny?
No, I'm just remembering your reaction. Now that the initial panic has subsided, you did do a, like, in cartoons when you see the, like, dump with, like, four
That's what
limbs.
I was saying. That's what I was saying. And the hat goes in the air.
Yeah.
You looked over. I'm sitting on a stool, both legs up, both arms up, headphones. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, that's what it looked like, everybody.
Yeah. So we're getting a special call here. Let me see if I can patch it in.
Nice.
I'm going to have to ask our guest to turn down their radio. Let's see if this works. Hello, caller, can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Caller, thank you so much for calling up and for messaging us on the chat, seeing if we locked the door to the radio station.
Yeah, I heard the loud explosion, and I just wondered what was going on.
Well, we hear those explosions more than we'd like, to tell you the truth, and we remain totally puzzled by what. But this isn't a show of explosions and weird noises. This is a show of pilgrimage and power spots. And I'm curious, caller, who I'll just make this clear to give context. This is my mom on the phone. So, Mom, thanks for calling. Do you have any insights into what my brother and I were like, or what imaginative world we occupied at any given time?
Oh, absolutely. I remember lots of fun times, like the time you made one of your bedrooms into a booby-trapped ship, and you took lines off our sailboat and tied it bed rail to doorknob to closet knob back to the bunk bed, so when you opened the door, you couldn't get in. You were in, like, a Chinese jump rope situation.
All right, so who were we preparing the trap for? I mean...
Oh, me, you know, myself and your dad. You know, you
hey, come in here. We need your help.
Yeah, and then yell, and then, hey, Mom, come on in. And you're giggling and covering your mouth. And, you know, of course, I played right into it and got trapped in the spider web. And, oh, yeah.
You know, that's where I get my good bedroom. Sense of humor, then. It's clearly from you.
And your bedroom was usually a Stella Tour, just all spooky, you know.
Spooky kid.
Lots of action figures and castles and just real, real imaginative toys. Yeah, blocks.
And did my brother and I present ourselves as characters ever? Like, would I say, hey, I'm not, that's not, don't call me that. I'm Skeletor.
Oh, yeah,
or,
yeah. You went through time periods where you had different names for yourself and we needed to call you that.
Anything in particular?
Lots of camouflage. No, just whatever period you were in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's...
Fun days.
I have to say, as a young person, camo just seemed the most practical outfit in case I would ever need to run away. Yeah.
Well, you thought you were invisible or no one could see you. And, you know, I'm standing right there talking to you. You really took it to extremes. One of your birthday parties was a camo-themed party. And we pitched about 8 pup tents on the back lawn.
Yeah.
And had a big campfire. And everybody had to come in. No, we gave everybody camos when they came to the party. That was their door prize. And blacked out under your eyes, and you slept overnight, and we had hot dogs on sticks and s'mores,
wow.
And everybody went home mosquito bitten.
Oh, yeah, but I remember in our backyard, we used to have a big concrete slab, and we used to make fires on it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There was a nice concrete slab that maybe was for that. I forget what it was. We eventually had I'm curious about our affinity for guns from a young age. I mean, how did that work out? How did we end up children with guns?
Well, I'm not being sexist, but little boys just make everything into a gun. And you had friends who weren't allowed to have guns and they weren't in their homes and they came over. I remember one, I won't say any names, but a banana at breakfast turned into a handgun, a banana.
Naturally.
Yeah. A coat hanger. Oh, yeah, those were always bent out of shape, held sideways, and a bow and arrow, always.
Yeah.
Oh, the bow and arrow. I used to do the bow and arrow.
Yeah,
I imagine myself like a forest spirit with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. And how about the time we put a ladder on the home, went up to the second story chimney.
This is just a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah. In this day and age, we would have just, tied a rope from the chimney
to
the
a tree.
To a great big black oak tree that we had out back and made you a zip line.
That's right.
And even these little girls in little black patent leather shoes and big bows in their hair and fancy dresses come over and they would just climb up that ladder.
It was one of those tall painting ladders that was like 11 feet, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it was as dangerous as you could get.
And there was no easy transition from the top of the ladder to the roof.
So you had to scramble.
No,
you had to have someone. You have to have someone kind of help you on the roof from the top of the ladder.
Yeah. Big gap there.
And the only way that you could get off
was by... You were committed to that zip line.
You were committed to... And we had a mattress that you would have to let go at the right time to bounce off the mattress.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Child
endangerment.
You went through a WWF phase.
Still am. Still there.
When you probably weighed, 48 pounds soaking wet. That was your Halloween costume.
Mm-hmm.
And you had big black belt, you know, that signified you'd won.
Dad's belt that he had to wear to work on Monday. So it was, you know.
Probably. And we decked it out with tin foil and magic marker, WWF and stuff. And I loved being the mom of two little boys. So while you're at school, I went out and got all these big cardboard boxes from appliance stores that had refrigerators and sofas in them and stuff. Came home and made you a ring and got styrofoam. And you reenacted
that is
the
so
WWF
fun to bash each other over the head with
styrofoam that a lot of the articles were packed in. So, and then you made me videotape it with one of those video recorders that weighed about, 29 pounds, and you kept on one shoulder, and you go, catch this, Mom, and you'd roll off the couch and almost, someone break a neck and hit each other with the styrofoam and sound effects, and those were good times.
And when there's no other option than your imagination, it just grows stronger and stronger, and you're able to play pretend with any object they give you.
Yes, and that is critical for growth and development of young children. Mm-hmm. Time alone, imagination, pretending, playing in a mud puddle, playing with the hose.
Yeah.
It's not screen time.
Endangerment of life and limb.
Yeah, no, danger is a part of it. No, risk is a part of it. Yeah. That, like, when you walked out of your house and you were able to play outside of your house in the lawn or even go farther around the neighborhood or into – we had a lot of wooded areas near our house.
Yeah, it was a beautiful neighborhood.
It was a beautiful neighborhood.
I remember two other really great – this Indiana Jones, I guess, was a movie – and you were your part, so you were about 8 and 9.
All of these stories are just so reckless. I love it.
How about the recycle box, the recycle bin on a skateboard?
Do you know those bins? Stella, do you know those bins are like recycled? These are not garbage cans.
These are plastic bins.
Plastic bins that you were – yeah, you remember those?
Yeah.
You toss your cans.
They're squat, yeah. And
so you'd put that unanchored on a skateboard.
At the top of the hill.
And just let it go. And – the recycle bin would slide off the skateboard and go into the ditch.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do you remember the worst injury that I can remember sustaining as a young person was, I'll just give you the equation, you can do the math. Basketball, I was playing with a basketball and a baseball bat. And I whammed the basketball and it bounced right back and got me right in the head.
Oh, no.
The thing is, though,
you had some pretty mean pool basketball games, too.
Oh, yeah. We used to play basketball.
People lost teeth, had black eyes. Good old days.
Well, good old days. Thanks for taking us down memory lane, Kelly.
It is enjoyable for me, too. Oh. Yes.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Well, I love the show.
Oh, thanks a lot.
And always tune in on Fridays, and it's just great.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Kelly. Have a great Friday.
Good night. Yes, you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Well, an unbiased endorsement for the show.
An objective endorsement by my mother for the show. Well, with that, what do you think we launch into College Years Old?
My favorite song.
Which is, I mean, you could just hear.
The joy.
The joy.
The fun. The anticipation.
Enjoy.
Today is the day that you celebrate. Today is the day you graduate. Now your college years old. College years old, college years old. I can't wait to be college years old. College years old, college years old. When I get to be college years old. Parents, siblings, and all of your relations offer you their congratulations. Now it's time. Vacation, save up money for school. Summer came and the summer went. You drive to the campus with your parents. Got your trapper keeper and a new backpack for notebooks, pencils, and pens. College years old, college years old. I can't wait to be college years old. College years old, college years old. When we get to be college years old. Pull up to the dormitory, shake the hand of your new RA, be considerate to your roommate, make the semester great. Choose a major and stay on task, don't sleep in and don't be late for class. Library time will help you pass every exam that you take.
College is old.
What I want, cause I'm college years old. Teacher says to study and take good notes, but I'm in the back of the room cracking jokes. My RA, he's a jerk, always up in my fears. I'd rather chug some Sprite and play Ultimate Frisbee. It's me, my homies, we're having a ball. Got my Uncle Jesse posters hanging on.
And you stay in line, then you earn a fun win. my friends. There's so many of them. Yes, meet my friends. They'd like to meet you. Meet my friends. Let me introduce them. Yes, come on, everybody, and meet all my friends. Meet my friend,
Backpack Tony.
Meet my friend,
Buck Wobbin.
Meet my friend,
Starshoot Pilaf.
Meet my friend,
Beef Wellington.
Meet my friend,
William Burger King.
Meet my friend,
Tonka Karloff.
Meet my friend,
Jim Episcopal.
Meet my friend,
Coralini Hansen.
Meet my friend,
Tank Top Tammy Robinson.
Meet my friend,
Amigo Migas.
Meet my friend,
Trumpet Smith.
Meet my friend,
Clip Touch Bob Glutzett.
Meet my friend,
Puppet Toothwee.
Meet my friend,
Salamo de Plouf.
Meet my friend,
Colchester Borgia Beluga Jr.
Meet my friend,
Rabbanovich Reginald Pink.
Meet my friend,
Goulash Belvedere.
Meet my friend,
going to a party and everyone's invited. Yes, everyone's excited, there's so much to do. Gonna have a good time with Cool Ranch Doritos, Kraft Macaroni Odos, and you too. Totino's and Gino's, get the best pizza Rosinos. Set them in the microwave and put them on the plate. Come on, eat some hot snacks and open up your backpacks. Share some food with friends, it's the right thing to do. Come on out to my place on Taco Night Tuesday or Pizza Night Friday. I'd love to see you.
Stella, I know that
those are two of my favorites.
Yeah, I know that you appreciate Hank and Dad as much as I do.
I mean, I can't, like, of all the songs in the world, or artists in the world,
yeah,
I sing little snippets of these songs so often. Because they speak to something very, like, fundamental. So, and you know, we both work on a college campus.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you the number of times a day I see students doing something, or I myself am reminded of something, or I'm doing something, and I'm just singing to myself, college years old, college years old, I can't wait to be college years, because it's such a true thing. College years old is not, oh, I'm 19. I wasn't college years old when I was 19.
Yeah.
I dreamed of college years old when I was 16.
Yeah.
And now, older, I look back at college years old, and it was not about being 19 or 20. It was about being college years old.
College years old is a fantasy that you have between the ages of 12 and 17.
And then again, between like 25. And
I was about to say between forever. 35 and 45. You look back and you think, man, when I was college years old. What do you make of that idea that it is the best time of your life?
I mean, for me personally, it wasn't.
No.
No. I had a great time. I had a fabulous time. You know, maybe I'm like too resistant to it, but I hate that rhetoric. I hate, like, that was the best time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, it's like, man, you're just kind of foreclosing yourself to possibilities.
But I do understand why people say that.
I do, too. And, you know, there are things about it that I think, man,
it's easy
to
romanticize.
Yeah, and there are things about it that I think, man, that would be nice if that was also a norm going forward. Namely, as the next song we played indicated, Meet My Friends, the fact that, like, when you're in college, you have, at any given time, you can go and see one of 12 different friend groups that you know very well, or that you're ancillary to, or that you met through a club, or like, I mean, that was for me when I did college theater. A big part of it was I loved just having a little group of people that I would see every night and hang out with. That was like such a fun goof time.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do now.
It is. As a present-oriented person, I think I'm always in the best time of my life.
Exactly.
Even when it's not so good, I'm like, well, look at me ride the tiger. You know, like.
Yeah, this is the next chapter.
This is the next chapter. Story. And I always, I'm thankful. I'm gracious. I feel gracious. I feel gratitude.
Grateful.
I feel grateful for all that stuff.
And I think, you know, I do. There are times that I also feel college years old. And that's not, again, that's not like I feel 20. That's like I have a a community spirit or like a jubilation or like a curiosity. You know, it's like a, it's more of an energy thing than it is a specific, like, oh, I wish I was 20 again.
I don't.
I don't remember really what even being 20 was like.
To tell you the truth, I had a great time in college, to the best of my knowledge. Great time afterwards. But I always feel like I was bringing a lot of energy to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm still bringing a lot of energy to the table. So I don't, I wouldn't want to go back because I did the things I did when I was in college.
Yeah, exactly.
And I did other things.
When you were college years old.
When I was college years old, I did the things that I should and wanted to do. And after, I did the things I should have wanted to do. And now I feel like I'm doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm doing stuff I haven't done before. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of stuff I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to go back, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Though, I have to say, I had a clear sense of wanting to do the Camino de Santiago de Compostela in high school, and then I forgot about it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we got together that I was able to access that dream I had. It's nice that it's nice to have a dream that is waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And will represent itself when the time is right.
Yeah.
That's nice. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you know, I was recently having a long conversation with a friend about intuition, and she said something which was interesting to me, which, you know, as we've discussed on the show, like, the Camino we both independently were thinking of in our lives, and it kind of took the back burner, and then we came together, and I genuinely don't remember. All I remember is that suddenly we were planning the Camino. I don't know how that happened, but I've had a strong affinity for Spain as a place since then as well. And my friend was saying, you know, it's interesting, like, you have a strong affinity for Spain, and, like, you know, it's nothing has worked out so far for you to be there more permanently, but, like, she's like, but I like to think of things like that as intuition, which is to say that, and intuition doesn't have a timeline, which is an important part. Like, some things have a timeline, and some things you can say, oh, I'm going to look forward to that, but intuition might also just alert you to things that are right for you or are real for you or are going to happen for you, but a place that can be frustrating is not knowing when that time will come. You know, but knowing that that's a part of your life in some meaningful way. And I think for me, that the Camino was also like that. I knew it was going to be something.
Yeah.
And it just, the timing just, you know, took whatever time it took, you know?
Yeah, I like the idea of the future leaking through when I was young. And so for whatever reason, whether it was me conducting a ritual now that reverberated so strongly that my 14-year-old self picked
you
it
rang
up.
The bells.
Or my 14-year-old self got himself into the headspace where he was able to access some vision of the future. I'm not sure which way it went.
Yeah.
And maybe those aren't exclusive to each other, but yeah, it's just, I have to say, pretty cool to be able to follow whatever impulse took me to the Camino and drew me there. And I think that it really goes back to what we were talking about with respect to imagination. I think that cultivating a relationship with your muse is far more important than wealth, far more important than a career, far more important than any number of commonplace attributes that people celebrate.
Yeah, markers of success.
Markers of success. And it's wild to meet people who are conventionally seen as successful who are just brain dead.
Yeah.
Who that part of their brain, their capacity for joking, their capacity for puns, quick-wittedness, repartee, just cracking off one-liners, this their funny bone is broken. You know, that's the way I'll put it, that they just don't have a funny bone. But it's the opposite when you meet someone that has an extremely well-developed funny bone.
Yeah.
And you think, man, they could be a pauper or they could be a prince.
Yeah.
You know, and it really, it's impossible to place, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and not even just, like, being the person who cracks the jokes and makes the jokes, but also, the appreciation of it. You know, that's another thing. Because you can also, or in my experience, I can also meet people who maybe feel a little bit isolated or ground down, let's say. But once they're in a situation of good humor, they can sort of brighten up, too. I think there's also can be a reactive element also. It's not just people who are funny, the funny ones, you know. It can also be like a conviviality.
Oh, I'm convinced that funny is a collective trait.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that you can't say so-and-so isn't funny definitively.
Right.
I just don't think you've been in a situation where that person feels as though they can.
Feels fun.
Yeah, that person can feel fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, if the Order of St. George's Orders is anything, we tend to cultivate that collective spirit of communitas, which lends itself to comedy, to humor. And let me be more specific here. I think comedy and humor flow easily as an articulation of a higher state of consciousness. Mm. I think that there is an elevated sense of what is real. And I think comedy is, in a lot of times, self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Comedy is defying people's expectation in a way that is working on a higher level.
Yeah.
You know, so irony, sarcasm, these can be kind of pedestrian examples of this, but I think good comedy plays with expectations.
Yeah.
And surprises. Good comedy takes you by surprise. You know, I think that's what causes that physiological response of laughter, that ejaculation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I didn't expect that, and so I'm giving you an emotional response.
Right.
And that emotional response is not, it's not as easy to evoke out of people if they see it coming. They're not going to laugh. They can say, oh, that's funny. There was a buildup and I saw it coming and I'm glad there's a release. But I think that the genuine laughs you get are often unexpected.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they're experiential. I'm laughing again. Woo! About you jumping up limbs akimbo when that big bang happened. Like,
yeah.
In the moment, I was shocked, and then it was funny, and now I'm laughing about it again. Or a favorite of mine, if I may share a
go
funny
for it.
Personal thing.
Sure, sure.
Was during the pandemic, we were holed up, and I made a black bean soup, and you kindly offered to put away the leftovers.
Yeah.
And I opened the fridge, and there was a mug overflowing, and its overflow was held together by Saran wrap.
Dude,
and I don't know why.
Michelle,
there's
I came
nothing
downstairs.
Funny about that, but I was like dying laughing. I was tears in my eyes. I hadn't laughed that hard in so long. And it's situational. It's experiential. It's about our relationship. It's about our soup. It's about the isolation of the pandemic. You know, I can't repeat that joke. It's not. It's not
I
that
I came
funny
downstairs
on air, you know?
And I was worried because you were out of breath on the couch, trying to catch your breath. I was like, is this like? Are you having a panic attack? Are you
COVID?
You were laughing so hard you couldn't breathe.
I was crying.
Yeah. You know, that was good.
It was so funny. But again, that's not like a funny thing. Like if I told that, as I just did, you wouldn't necessarily be like, wow, what an e-slapper.
If you were there.
Yeah. So much of it is experiential.
But I'm convinced that holiness is goofy.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that the holy goof is a central figure in the history of humanity's religious impulse.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if for some reason, my highest insights have always been gilded with humor.
Yeah.
And there's something very real and honest about slapstick.
Oh, yeah.
And I suppose in many ways it's allowed me to navigate the world, to be able to see through the seriousness that we really hope others take us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we hope others take us as serious as we take ourselves.
Right.
But being able to see through serious culture. Mm-hmm.
Or taking that to its logical extent, which is, I hope people see me as seriously as I see them, which is like often I'm laughing.
Yeah.
And they're laughing as well.
Yeah.
And that's good and great.
Yeah, to be flexible like that and to see the comedy even in the most darkest circumstances.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I think this is the virtue of cultivating spiritual practices, is recognizing that this is all dust. This is all a dumb show put on by an idiot, you know, for the enjoyment of a...
Sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yes. Yeah. And I think having that installed in your mentality allows you to weather storms a little easier.
Yeah.
You know, than someone who takes it all so serious. Yeah. Why so serious? What do you say we jump back into some Hank and Dad here?
All right, what you got on the docket?
When I'm Smart. Do you know that one?
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, the music is just so good.
Well, yeah, the arrangement.
The arrangement, that's the word. Yeah.
Where I can read, so I'm trying to be. When I'm smart, when I'm smart, I know why trucks have gas. When I'm smart, I would like a smart.
You can't beat
no,
that.
No, I'm smart. So we often talk about how good music. Oh boy.
Okay, we don't need to go into. This is Hey Dad, Hey What.
It's a great. Hey Dad, Hey What. Hey Dad, Hey What. It's a good call and response.
Yeah. You see the punk influence there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to say we talk often about, like, pop songs. Like, successful pop songs are good because the reason they're successful in part, I think, is they speak to, like, an extremely generic sentiment. Like, tonight's going to be a good night.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's a kind of multi-purpose, you know, it's not like trying to tell some fancy story or whatever, whatever. Not that those aren't good songs, but they just don't reach the same, you know, mainstream appeal. Hank and Dad does that, but in a funny way, because it's like, when I'm smart. Everybody has had that feeling of being like, man, when I'm smart,
oh, yeah.
I'll know about the stock market. Or like, when I'm college years old, I'm going to go talk to my RA. Yeah. You know, it's that yearning.
And Hank and Dad summons it so earnestly.
Exactly. It's not tongue-in-cheek at all.
No. There's something very honest and pure about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it doesn't hurt that the musical arrangements, earlier, are just very well textured, very well mastered. Jeb is a studio musician,
right.
So it makes sense that he would put a lot of time into it. And I guess that's where the surprise and enjoyment comes from, is because it's such technical arrangements combined with pure imaginative flow.
Yeah.
And it's rare to find.
Yeah, just pure id.
Yeah, pure id. Yeah, pure expression, volcanic eruption of this creative vision. And so we couldn't be any more excited about it. What do you think? Should I play the ultimate? This was a minor hit.
Okay.
In 2010, when I used to work for a radio or a music blog in Boston, and we sort of manufactured
the hype
around, it's called Pass the Test, and we pumped it on the blog all the time, and people enjoyed it.
Oh, there you go.
For good reason, in the way we enjoy it. So I hope you enjoy it.
Brush your teeth when you got bad breath, and when you study hard, you pass the test. Pass gas, drink, pass the test, and if you pass the test, it means you pass the test. Pay attention.
you. Do your best, and when you work real hard, then you'll pass the test. Never cheat, never guess. Just think real hard and pass the test. An insect, not a pest. And if you know the facts, then you'll pass the test. Birds pass eggs when they're in the nest. And when you're sitting in class, just pass the test. Clothes are dirty, don't get undressed. And when you study hard, you pass the test. Go to sleep, get some rest. And if you want good grades, just pass the test. Test machine.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
To the guy in brown, shout it all around.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
To the guy in red, say what I said.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
And how about Shane and Donovan D?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
Pumphrey Q, how about you?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
The holder never get the homework done. Lap parade.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
What about the Merryweather Dance Brigade?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
How about the laugh em up, go get em, true?
Pass the test. Pass the test.
The whole damn stitching up the road crew.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
And the lollygag and gag posse game.
Pass the test. Pass the test.
If you're feeling sad, don't get depressed. Just sharpen your pencil. Heat it up when you make a mess. So don't pass out, just pass the test. Write it down, but never guess. Fill in the blanks to pass the test. Pass it in and pass the test. And if you want good grades, just pass the test. Pass the test. Pass the test.
Pass the test, Stella.
That's the idea.
How you feeling? How you feeling on radio, on the show?
I'm happy to be on show. Love show.
Love show. Show's the best. Can't get pumped enough.
Back.
So, you know, we're approaching the end of the show here. And I just want to illustrate our joy about being back and how we get to play our favorite tune.
Mm-hmm.
How we get to play some of our favorite friends' music. It's excellent.
And hear other music coming from around the city.
Yeah, we do. That's part of it. All right, everybody. Well, we're going to sign off for now. Here's going to be Hank and Dad spending the night, followed by maybe a surprise. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I hope you enjoy, everybody.
You think it's wrong when you're 25
to ask your friends to spend the night? Well, that's all crap. Just gibberish jive. Cause when you do a sleepover, our eyes get bright, bright, bright. Watch some movies, share some laughs, pull some fingers without the gas, fart and chuckle and talk real crass, tell those stories, make it last. Say you're getting too old. People say you're needing to grow. People say there's something wrong. Now I say, check out this song. To spend the night, best friends laugh when they're spending the night. Sleeping bags and pillow fights, sugar highs and up all night. '25 ain't nothing wrong with spending the night and staying up till dawn. So spend the night. Spend the night, just spend the night, and spend the night. People say you're getting too old. People say you're needing to grow. People say there's something wrong. Now I say, check out this song.
Impressive stature, it was his nature to live alone, oh so alone, forever adrift in his houseboat home, moored in the harbor, not like any other home you or I have ever known, a sense of freedom. A sense of longing for the shores. In this humdrum town, you'll see him drive around in a Jeep so rugged and weathered, dreaming untethered. In a humdrum town, a man so clever, such a clever man. A man of few possessions.
but those who kiss have worlds of meaning and value. It would seem all he has to his name is a little matchbook and a little red knife and a mullet full of dreams and a roll of duct tape, a little roll of duct tape. Always helping others, such a clever man, a scientific mind, an altruistic kind of man, not like any other. Oh, MacGyver, he would never fire a pistol. No, he'd unload the pistol and put down the pistol, for he abhors all firearms. A man out of step and time in a modern climb. A man so clever, a man who never was really loved. A man alone on his own forever. Oh, MacGyver, with your little matchbox and your little red knife and your mullet full of dreams and your little roll of duct tape. Clever man, you're so clever, you're so very clever, but I know you live alone, you're so alone, always on your own, forever, oh MacGyver.
What's up, everybody? That's right. It's your favorite friends, JoJo and Solaria, and another favorite friend. That's right.
Hi, it's me.
Hey. It's Luca from Basement Radio.
Whoop, whoop.
We're
back
all
on.
In the studio together doing the thing with our friend Steve here as well. Shout out to all the Radio Valencia crew. Big ups to everyone that worked to get this thing back on its feet.
Yeah, it's true. We couldn't have done it, really. We couldn't have halfway done it without you guys.
Yeah, we just showed up and started talking as if we had done something.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, it feels great to be back on the air, yakking with both of you.
Yeah.
I have to say, Luca, you were there for us at the start. You were there when we were shooting in the gym. Luca was there saying, "Hey, you guys gonna play some pickup radio?"
I like this. Fun. This retconning of our origin story.
Just throwing the old mic around.
That's right. Tossing it around.
No, you guys were more like mentors in this relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You were like seasoned veterans.
Sages.
Wait, mentors or minotaurs? Which one? We were waiting at the center of the maze for you.
Yeah, and I was like, what is a radio?
How do you radio? And now you are lost in the maze. Congratulations, my friend. You are trapped in here. You're trapped in radio with us. Trapped in Radio Valencia.
Happily.
Happily, happily. So give us a preview here. This is behind the scenes. It's so rare we get to speak candidly to someone from from Basement Radio, and they give us the real story.
Oh, well, we decided since it was our third season, and we're marking seasons by 16 films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
because that's
natural.
Like one a week.
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't really make sense.
I don't.
No, just go with it. I'm with it. No.
It should be 12 films because that would be 3 months. But the
yeah, 16 isn't even divisible by 3.
Not divisible by 4.
Says who? No, you know, Luca, there's a very direct question I want to ask here.
Yeah.
And that is about programming. So this is how you know you're really on something special. I feel possessive of it. When there is a film screen that doesn't align with my vision, I feel as though I think, what's going on here? It's such a powerful institution.
Yeah.
That, later, Steve, that I feel as though I have something to say.
Well, we have this curve, like, so I get really excited by those curve balls. Like, the, because, not from, like, a sort of, like, you know, like, gotta keep them guessing, you know what I mean, kind of way of thinking about it, but more so that there are connections that can be, like, formed through the films, like maybe between, like, you know, like a makeup effects artist or you know, like a production designer that aren't so, like, directly visible.
Yeah.
And then and I would like to say that they're intentional, but they're completely accidental. But this is what ends up happening. And I'm sure you guys have, like, a similar thing with your area of study. But, like, you just become attracted to things that are in the same universe of other things, you know?
Yeah.
And so it kind of, like, works out that way. But to answer your question in a very long-winded fashion, everyone was complaining about us not having a theme. So for this third season of Basement Radio and screenings and accompanying screenings, we have a theme.
Uh-huh.
And since it's our third season, we're going to do only sequels.
Oh, yes!
And I also, and initially was, I don't know, I feel like maybe you guys feel this way too, but I think artists are very anti-theme.
Yeah.
Like, I always hated when people were like, I'm doing a water show. Like, oh, cool, that sounds dumb as fuck. But I do think that having this, like, loose genre category, like the sequel, will open up, like, an interesting conversation about why people make sequels.
Right.
You know?
Cash grab.
Uh-huh.
Usually cash grab.
Sometimes cash grab.
Yeah, come on. Get some of that, squeeze a little extra blood out of that orange.
But
you know?
Sometimes it's like...
Or stone?
Like, you know, you keep squeezing it, and it becomes something else.
Yeah.
You know, it can be pretty good. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, if they're beholden to certain, like, plot points or, like, effects, and then they have to fill in the between, you know, they're no longer trying to make, like, the next greatest horror film or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like, what if, okay, well, we have to make this person die in this way. How can we build a story around that?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm thinking of Godzilla here.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
have this... You know, just absolutely visionary film. You have this visionary piece of art that touches on so many different aspects of Japanese culture in the post-war era.
Yeah.
And so, for example, just to give you one small kind of detail, it was prohibited by the occupation forces to show the Japanese Defense Force in a positive light.
Mm-hmm.
And so all forms of militarism were more or less prohibited. You could not present the Japanese military as heroes. And you had just an extremely talented filmmaker take that prohibition and turn it on its head by virtue of the fact that Japan was under attack by this giant monster. And so the only reasonable response that the Japanese people could take would be to marshal, and that was okay. The occupational forces had no problem because this was a monster movie.
Yeah.
But it gave the Japanese people a model.
They got their NOM or whatever.
It allowed them to feel patriotic.
Yeah.
And because, you know, of course, the recent past was somewhat traumatic by virtue of their defeat in the Pacific War, it allowed them to see their military as a potent force.
Yeah.
And so it rallied the spirits of a population. And if you look at the trajectory that Godzilla takes when he makes landfall on the island,
he only goes through the western districts. So if you watch, he doesn't touch the Imperial Palace. He doesn't touch any of the indigenous, or I should say, the landmarks of the Japanese emperor. Mm. He destroys Ginza. He destroys the western shopping districts where all of the GIs go, where the western cinema is, and then he leaves.
Yeah.
So there was just all of these... Okay, I'm going on and on.
Well, can you imagine if Americans had those same limitations? Like, we won't make any film.
No police propaganda in film. Yeah,
we won't make any film that makes cops look good.
Well,
there goes the film industry.
I privately,
the entire 80s.
I privately have like three uptight. I get uptight when these film rules are broken. One is copaganda. You know, so boycott cop culture. Yeah. It goes without saying that if the hero is a cop, you're watching propaganda.
Well, there's so many good movies, though. How do you write all those off?
Well, you can still watch them and enjoy them, but you just know you're being a naughty boy. Okay. Second, and this is one of my pet peeves, is it's a trope you find in horror, which I like to call the evil poor. And it's rural, agrarian-type people who are portrayed as inherently maniacal, insane, murderous.
Okay.
Chainsaw Massacre. Yes. Classic point.
Yeah, but... Okay, but the reason... Yeah, and Herschel Gordon Lewis before that and stuff.
Right, the Hills Have Eyes?
That was Wes Craven, but the Herschel Gordon Lewis is like... sorry, what am I blanking right now? The Three on a Meat Hook. Gruesome threesome.
But it's a trope, though. Yeah, I mean, you find it across as... You find some abandoned farm, and of course the farmhand isn't like a... hometown, warm-hearted person, he has people chained up in the...
I've heard this term before, and I wonder why people are sensitive about it. Or not sensitive, but sort of...
Why do we get so uptight?
Why do we get so uptight about the poor? Because it's like, if there's blaxploitation, can't there be hicksploitation? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, isn't there something to be learned from turning the white poor into, like, a sort of, like, you know...
Powerful force.
Yeah, and like an exaggeration of itself, you know what I mean? Like a sort of, I mean, that's what you learn from sort of sexploitation films.
Yeah.
Like kind of like, it's like everyone's, you know, like sort of sexist opinions brought to like the 10th degree.
Right,
you know?
Right. But like, you know, with black exploitation, I'm thinking of like Human Tornado, Dolomite, Shaft. Mm-hmm. It's also a celebration of black consciousness and black liberation. So in many ways, they're flawed heroes, but they are something to admire. There's very little to admire in evil, poor hicksploitation.
Well, maybe it's like a two-sided coin, right? So you have Texas Chainsaw Massacre on one side, but you got like Joe Dirt on the other side. And he's the hero of exploitation.
Okay,
like,
yeah, I'll give you that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or Ernest or something.
Yeah, Joe Dirt is hicksploitation.
Yeah.
But it's David Spade. You know what I mean? Like the least capable.
So
we were talking about Ernest a few years ago.
Really?
Yeah, remember we went out to lunch. And we were swapping our favorite Ernest P. Earl movies. Mine's Ernest. Well, everyone knows the best is Ernest Goes to Camp. And then my favorite though is Ernest Scared Stupid, which I think you should show. It's actually pretty scary.
You've told me that before. I've never seen any of the Ernest movies.
No, there's a story behind this. I remember my parents let me rent any scary movie I wanted from the movie shop.
This is my favorite story.
I can't believe I've told you both this story. But it's... I'll tell it again. What the hell? I was in my parents' room watching this movie by myself at like 6 p.m. And like 30 minutes later, I like run to my mom. And I was like, turn it off. It's dumb. Ernest is not even that scary. Just turn it off. Please help me turn off this movie, Mom.
Yep.
That's so stupid.
It's scared stupid. I was scared stupid. It wasn't just Ernest who was scared stupid. It was me, too.
Yeah.
But your favorite Ernest movie is...
Ernest Goes to Prison.
Ernest Goes to Prison.
Because there's... Yeah, like you get into a lot of those like sort of... you know, like evil, poor stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Know what I mean, Vern? You know what I mean, Vern? Stella, do you know the Ernest franchise?
I know. I can see the cover of one of them with like a guy kind of in like a fisheye lens, like leering out at you.
Mm. It's Mitsu.
Did they close the door?
Here, no, Mitsu's good.
See, it's open.
Mitsu, grab a chair. Hey,
you know, Mitsu's doing an Amazon delivery now.
I noticed that. He has an Amazon package.
He's here on double duty. He's
Mitsu.
He's got to do the show, but he's...
Mitsu, we're talking Ernest.
So I was actually listening.
Oh. You couldn't help yourself. Hello. Do you have an earnest anecdote? The importance of being earnest. That was a missed opportunity.
I don't know if that's my least favorite earnest
film. The importance of being earnest. Yeah, the Oscar Wilde earnest film.
Same one.
Oscar Wilde. What happened with him recently? Someone desecrated his grave.
I think that's something you're supposed to do, though. It's in Pierre Lachaise.
Oh, okay.
So people are constantly knocking the penis off the huge statue that marks his gravesite. And, in fact, Aleister Crowley.
Am I here?
You're on. You're on, Meats. Right, throw on them headphones. You're good to go, bro.
Oh, are there no headphones? Here, I'll find some for you.
Okay.
Anyways, Aleister Crowley was one of these vandals who knocked the dick off of the angel that marks Oscar Wilde's grave.
So, am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
So, I was also... Hi, everybody.
Hold on. Stella, can I get you to...
Hello.
I can hear. I don't...
Stella, you're not...
That one doesn't work.
That one doesn't work.
Does this one work?
That works.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
You're telling me that there's like an anatomical dick on the angel.
It's not anatomical. Oh, yeah. There's an anatomical. I thought you meant animatronic. No, now it's just a butterfly that they have. It's an iron.
It's an iron butterfly?
No, where the dick is just a butterfly.
I see.
And anyways, Aleister Crowley wore it on his lapel for a while.
We can all hear.
Oh,
wait, you can hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great.
Luca, can I ask you to bring your mic really close?
Yeah. Hold on. I just didn't want to make a big noise, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Nice? Well, you don't need to drag it. You can pick it up and like move it closer. That's part of it.
Oh, that's fine.
All right, so wait. At this point, let me invite Mitsu to throw on the intro music, and we will seamlessly.
He doesn't even have it ready.
Segue.
He's kind of like, he's pretty tuned out of Basement Radio these days.
Well, I've noticed. He hasn't been on it forever. He's been boycotting it? Is that true?
He's been out of town, and then he was like, I'm going to be like 20 minutes late today.
I'm sorry for having a job.
That is a job, too.
I'm also sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Work sucks. Everyone knows that. All right, everybody. That was Neon Shrines. Thank you for listening.
Seamless transition.
This has been your favorite friends, JoJo, Stellaria, Luca, and Mitsu.
Says it out loud. It's this audio format that we're on radio. They're going to play their outro first, bro. Okay. You got time.
Yeah, you're good. No need to rush. Everybody, thanks again for listening. This is live radio, in case you couldn't tell. And I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. This is not a fucking podcast. And why do I say that? It's because we go to a studio, we sit in front of mics, we record it live,
that's true.
And then we go home, and that's it. Podcasts are pre-recorded, they're edited.
We're like, ooh, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, well, too late, bro. It's live. So everything, and Stella, what's with
that thing about the evil poor? Ugh. Wish I could edit that out.
I wish I didn't say I loved those movies. Well, you're on live radio. Stellaria is there.
I was just making a face at podcasts.
Yeah, me too. Podcasts suck, because
they got a shtick and they got ads.
And listeners.
Screw
that. What jerks.
Our RPF, resting podcast face.
Yeah. A sneer and a scorn.
Ooh, a sneer and a slurp over here. All right, everybody.
I bet they don't even get drunk when they record a podcast.
No, they're super sober. They drink a bunch of coffee.
So they've been sent by the coffee machine.
Yeah.
Dude, who brought them in, man?
They have goatees.
Ugh. You're like not full beards like us awesome dudes.
And me.
And Michelle.
No, now we have to edit.
Farts. Hold on. Wait, okay, from the top, everybody, don't interrupt me. Everybody, this has been Neon Shrines. Thanks for listening. We've been your favorite friends. Oh. Sorry, guys. Thanks for listening. I don't know why that was so bad. All right, hold on. I'm going to bring all the...
Yeah, all the mics got to go out.